Good morning and welcome to Chelan County Board of Directors. And this is our regular commission meeting, study session, November 5th, 2018. It is 10:04 a.m. and we're open for business. All five commissioners are here and welcome to all of you. As a citizen, if you want to address the commission, you're certainly welcome to do so. We would ask you to state your name, your address, and we'll give you a reasonable length of time. Like all of you, to silence your cell phones, given that opportunity to do so now without humiliation. And we'll leave that there. And now we have our general manager, Steve Wright, Rebecca, and Eric at the head table with us. And I'd like to start out with a little bit different thing. Late in the week, we always get an email from Steve kind of updating us on the what the agenda is going to look like and the pace of it, et cetera. And he opened it with a little bit different phrase, and he said, bring your track shoes. So I did happen to find mine. So I do have my performance track shoes from high school and college. They don't look like they're... Well, it looks like they've been performed in. We won't talk about what level that occurred. But so we are fully prepared and dutiful to try and respect the wishes of the general manager as we move forward. And there's a little bit of fallout of sand. And trust me, it's been about 50 years since I put those on. With that being said, our Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute by Ben Field. Thank you, Ben.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. I'm Ben Field. I work in IT. I support our asset management program and our mobile computing program. What I'd like to talk to you about today is psychological safety, which is the kind of safety we tend to care more about when we're in high school than we care about matters of life and death. But it doesn't go away, and it makes a big difference in the workplace and our performance and with other kinds of safety. Psychological safety is where we are free to be who we are, to say what we think, to do our best, without worrying that there will be consequences for maybe not fitting in like we should have or not predicting how people are going to respond or how it's going to affect our careers. And an example of this is if you are familiar with basketball, you know, when people shoot free throws, they shoot overhand, which is a great way to shoot a shot during a game when you're trying to get distance between you and the other player, the defending player. But when you're shooting free throws, it's statistically a higher percentage shot to shoot underhand. But that's not a psychologically safe shot. So it's not done, and that's reasonable because it isn't psychologically safe for someone like Shaquille O'Neal to improve his shot in that fashion, so he doesn't. And the same thing happens to all of us whenever we're in a position where we're thinking about what would be safe for us when we're performing at our best. So here's some ways that leaders can improve psychological safety. You can set clear expectations, so who does what and why it's important. Stress those important things in a calm and consistent way. And if something isn't important, then don't stress it. Don't be too rigid about it. Model universal respect for people. Consistent management standards, not based on status, so treating people the same. Modeling acceptance of outgroups, people that aren't like us, whatever our team is. We can make conflict a commonplace and comfortable thing. Do it kindly, do it often. Do it easily without too much stress, and it's not that big a deal when a higher conflict comes. We can involve people in decision-making. We can invite constructive disagreement when we think we know what we think. When we listen, we can do it curiously to understand so that when we get to the end of having heard someone, we think, even if we disagree with them, we could say it in a way that they would feel like we know what they think, and that it was said in a respectful and dignified way. If we can get to that point, we probably understand them and ourselves a little better than when we started. They'll feel safe too. And we can cultivate a sense of humor. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you.
Questions, comments?
That was great. Thank you, Ben.
That was probably the most unique
safety moment I've ever heard, and I really, really appreciated it.
Very much so.
It was good. By the way, I think there's two former NBA guys that shot free throws underhanded, and I think it was Wilt Chamberlain and Rick Barry, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I think Rick Barry still has a percentage.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you caught my attention right at the beginning with your safety minute.
Good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
With that, let's move on to item number two, approval of the agenda. Let's take a look at the agenda and any additions, corrections, changes you'd like to make.
I have no changes. You say the staff is recommending item 11. We move to consent. It's just the it's updating the number of the people who are authorized to sign for the district standard.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, and then Rebecca gave us a correction on the minutes, and so if we acknowledge that correction at this point, then when it comes time to approve the consent agenda this afternoon, it becomes incumbent as part of it.
Good.
Anything else? So what I'm hearing is at item 11, to the consent agenda and the approval of an amendment to our minutes.
Yep. Yes.
Anything else? All right. Item three.
Okay, we want to give you an update on what's going on down at Rock Island. Dan Garrison, Brett Bickford will be joining us at the table here. Lots and lots of activity. So this is a big presentation with a number of things that have been completed and some challenges that we've got going on down there too.
Good morning. I'm Dan Garrison, Director of Hydro Operations.
And I'm Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management.
Brett and I are going to provide an update of all the activities underway at Rock Island. And just as a general sense, this update's been scheduled to appear before you for every month since June. And things keep changing. We've had lots of events at Rock Island, and we've been waiting for that point in time where everything's just kind of static and on schedule. We haven't quite gotten there, and we said, it's time to go. So here we are. Brett and I will go through this. I'm going to talk about the first bullet, the accomplishments for 2018. Brett will take over for the last three, the challenges that the rehab has had, the evaluation of all the schedules we've considered over the last several months, and then finally the recommended schedule. I'd also like to say that I actually gave this presentation last week at the General Manager's Forum at Rock Island. It took over an hour. And I think that's why Steve's saying track shoes, because we don't have that kind of time today, so we're going
to. So we need them.
Yeah.
I was just saying, I'd be happy if it's going to be an hour to give them to you.
Yeah, no, we're going to clip right along. So under our accomplishments, I'm happy to report that we've completed all of the Powerhouse 2 governor control upgrades and other electronic information systems. All that was done on units 1 through 8. We started work in 2013 on Unit 7. The last unit was complete at the end of June when that was on Unit 2. And most of that work was done by Central Maintenance. Powerhouse 2 draft tube gates. We started work on those several years ago due to the sluicing of gates being unreliable. We completed work on units 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7, and 8. We have unit 4 work starting, scheduled to start next week, and then we'll finish up all draft tube gates by the end of March 2019. All told, we spent about $5.4 million, or I'll expect to spend that amount of money by the time U 6 is completed. Also at Rock Island, I'm sure you're very familiar with, we initiated the Rock Island Storage Building. That work started in March of this year, 2018. We expect it to be ready for use this month. The total cost is coming in at about $5 million. And one of the first uses is to bring in all the electrical rehab equipment associated with Powerhouse 1.
Who did the tilt work for us?
The general contractor was Homey Builders.
Okay. So they did it?
Yes.
So everything on site, nothing trucked in?
Correct. All of them were poured on site and tilted on site.
Thanks.
Another accomplishment at Rock Island is the shuttle lift purchase. It was commissioned and ready for use near the end of August of this year. It's an all-terrain shuttle lift. You can see the rubber tires on the crane. It has a capacity of 70 tons, and we purchased this for the purpose of being able to pick equipment and move it into the new storage building and make best use of that space. Total project cost is about $950,000.
So in that storage building, we elected not to go to the expense of purchasing overhead cranes. We're going to use this all-terrain so we can move stuff in and out. There was always logistics. How do you get it off a truck and in and under the bridge cranes? This will be able to go in and outside of the building as well as down to the powerhouse.
Another accomplishment is the construction of a new water tank at Rock Island for domestic water. That was commissioned and ready for use on June 21st, 2018. Spent about $2.4 million. The old surge tank you see there to the left is also still remains, and we are waiting to get more definition from the State Historical Register on how we need to document or remember that we have that tank. It is in the register.
Really? Mm. Really? Oh. How old is that tank?
1930s.
Okay, so it was original.
Original construction.
Yeah. Powerhouse 1 house unit, small generator located on the east side of the powerhouse. That work initiated in November of 2017. You may recall that we had difficulties during commissioning, and that first winding failed due to a contractor flaw. Contractor provided a whole new winding that was just received last month. I did see the unit spinning last week, so it is going into commissioning stages as we are talking now. Hope to see that up and running this week. We spent approximately $700,000. Other accomplishments, in prep for the B1 through 4 modernization, we wanted to provide new head gates, new stop logs, and new dewatering systems for the units. That work and that equipment has been received and installed. It's currently in use in B4. It's also being installed in unit B3, and we have spent a total of $2.65 million on that equipment. This is what our new runner will look like for those turbines, B1 through B4. It's a four-blade turbine, all fixed in position. The major equipment associated with this contract is on schedule. It includes wicket gate shafts, turbine rubber runners, and head covers. The disassembly for B4 is underway, and we expect that unit to be returned to service in August of next year. The entire project budget is $68 million, and we've spent 14 of that so far. And last slide for me, B6 modernization is now complete. This has been a long time coming. We removed this unit from service due to air gap concerns in May 29th of 2014. It sat idle in mothball status until Brett took over. Modernization began on May 16th, and it was commissioned on April 5th of this year. It's about 11 months late from what we intended. Brett will go into the details of that when he takes over in the presentation. But I'm happy to report that we have received all the guarantees for efficiency on the generator turbine as expected. The total cost for that project for B6 was $30.6 million.
So what are you looking at in that picture? There's not a turbine. There's not a generator. So that's the draft tube. So that was one of our unique technical innovations on these B5 through B10 units, and that was to modify the draft tube to help us get this as much as 12% efficiency gain. And so in that draft tube, on our first unit, B10, we actually installed, not in this picture as shown, as a horizontal splitter vane. And that was really challenging to install. And so we switched to doing some concrete draft tube shape changes to be able to get about only a 0.5% efficiency less, but actually more energy from the units. And so this is showing what it looks like when they're doing those draft tube modifications on the sidewalls. They've got forms up where they're reshaping it. And down in there, you see a bunch of equipment that they're utilizing. So this is something that we think is pretty unique and innovative and helped us to get quite a bit of energy gain.
What are you splitting? What's a splitter vane?
So a splitter vane was kind of like an airfoil on a race car.
Yeah.
Except we put it down into the draft tube. And as the water comes off of the runner blades, it comes off in a very large swirl. You look over in your propeller prop and your boat, it's just a kind of a swirl. It's and so the flow was very unorganized. And in the draft tube models, we even saw water would recirculate on the roof and then return back. Mm. And so this disorganization of flow actually, kind of an exhaust pipe that's too small, the water couldn't get out fast enough at high flows. And so the splitter vane helped to break up the swirl and help direct the water out the draft tube in a more uniform.
Okay.
So we got about 6 or 7% efficiency gain by breaking up that swirl. And so we're able to do that now with shaping the concrete to help that water not to be able to recirculate in the dead areas.
Cool. Thank you.
So as Dan's reviewed, we've had a number of projects that have been worked on by hundreds of district staff. And a number of our objectives for schedule, budget, safety, et cetera, have been met in doing those projects. In one area, though, where there's some disappointment, and that's in the Powerhouse 1 rehab work. And so in the past 16 months, again, trying to keep on track with that work because it's important to get it done, we've had these challenges. And so I'm going to go over these in the next few slides and give you a little more details. The first one was that our unit B6. As we were doing that work in the early stages of that project, we had a subcontractor drop one of our head covers, which is made out of cast iron. And so when that dropped, it kind of broke like a china plate. And so we weren't able to refurbish that, and so that subcontractor had to foot the bill to making a new one, but that caused a schedule delay. We were also working on our existing rotor spiders because the contract says that those will be refurbished, and through about 4 months of trying to repair a number of cracks in that, we were unable to do it, so we went ahead and ordered a new one. And so that accumulated to about a 4 to 5 month delay in the project. And we replanned and rescheduled for that. But then the contractor took quite a bit longer to finish that, so the accumulative was about an 11-month impact. And that was a disappointment because we'd already done two units within a 12-month or one-year time frame, and this one took almost two. Soon after that unit, so last summer, B9, while that B6 was under construction, B9... had a Kaplan pipe failure. And I'll show some slides and explain more what a Kaplan pipe is. When B9 was commissioned, there were a couple of punch list items. One of them was a vibration. As we bring these units online, we do commissioning, and part of that is to understand each unit. Each unit is unique, and so we get signature information on how that unit performs so we can baseline it over time and monitor the health of that machine. And so as we took that data, we compared it to B10, we noticed there was a vibration that was different than 10. We didn't know what was causing it. And so we put that out as we have a trial operation period. We did inspections. We didn't see that the vibration was causing any issues. When we got near the end of the warranty, we didn't see there were any issues. It was kind of one of those items, like you hear something in your car when you're driving, and you're like, what's that sound? You take it into the shop, and they're like, I don't hear it. You know, you drive it again, I hear it, you don't hear it. That was one of those nagging things that we couldn't identify what the issue was. But when we had that Kaplan pipe failure, we went, was that a precursor? And so, again, I'll show you what the Kaplan pipe failure is. We worked on the Kaplan pipe. It was repaired. As we were doing the commissioning for that Kaplan pipe failure, B9 had an exciter rub. And so then that took it out of service again before we had a chance to see whether that vibration was gone, et cetera. While we were working on the B9 exciter rub, B6 had an exciter rub. And we're like, man, what is going on? We saw a different vibration signature on 6 than we saw on 9, so maybe they're related, maybe they're not. And then on top of that, our head cover, when we took B7 apart, we found that it had a number of cracks in it. Again, these head covers at Rock Island Powerhouse 1 are made out of cast iron, so all we could do to repair it was actually put a big metal stitch in it. And so looking at, you know, longevity, looking at our values as well as that metal stitch, it'll keep it from leaking, but is it going to handle all the loads and forces over 40 years? We decided probably not, and we should go ahead and purchase a new one. So that's a little bit of impact on the B7.
Okay, I'm going to show off my ignorance. Maybe I'm the only person in the room that doesn't know what an exciter rub is.
So I'm glad you asked, and I have some slides for that. So if it's okay if I
okay.
share that,
okay.
and I'll show you a little bit more about and explain what that is. So this is, I kind of explained some challenges on the slide, on that last slide, but this is the schedule. So up at the top, this is a split schedule showing what we thought would be happening back in December 2016 when we awarded B1 to B4. The lower half is the schedule in the current state. And so back in December 2016 when we awarded the B1 to B4 contract, that had the assumption that, as you can see, there's not many other unit outages going on, so we can do the B1 to B4 work. We awarded an alternative that allowed us to work on 3 units at a time for efficiency. The work on 1 through 4 is much less than on the 5 through 10s, and so that's why we think we could do 3 of them at a time. But again, the lower half shows we've had some delays and how that's impacted us, and now we're being impacted by how we're going to proceed. So on our 1 through 4 schedule, we're not able currently to go into the work simultaneously because of what I've explained on B7, B9, and B6. So what's a Kaplan pipe? The Kaplan pipe is that yellow-colored pipe that's shown there kind of in the center of that slide. That's a pipe that delivers hydraulic fluid to a piston, and then that piston goes up and down, and then that's what moves the blades, changes the blade pitch. That pipe rotates, so it's connected to the top of the runner, and it spins at the same speed as the runner. And so to help guide that in that spinning rotation, there's some bushings and bearings up towards the top of the unit in around where the unit is excited. And so a bearing grabbed onto that pipe and held it at the top while the unit was still rotating, and so it just twisted the pipe right off, mm-hmm. right in half. So at the bottom of that, you can see that rotation failure. The other slide is just showing the new Kaplan pipe. It was installed, and the unit was undergoing commissioning in that photo. So you asked about the exciter. So the exciter is a part of the unit that helps create the magnetic field. So a DC current is sent to this device called an exciter. It energizes the field so that you can actually get AC current to flow from the unit. So the exciter sits up at the top, and it has this assembly of brushes that are in contact with the rotating shaft, and it helps deliver that energy back out to the conductors, which take it outside of the plant. So we had a slight movement in B9, only slight enough so that rotating part within the exciter barely contacted the stationary part within the exciter. So fortunately, it didn't cause a lot of damage. Operations is very vigilant. They heard, smelled noises and said, hey, we need to shut the unit down. There's something abnormal. So this kind of shows that rub. We can see the high heat transfer there into the metal, discolored the metal. Again, we caught it before it caused any serious damage. So I mentioned we had the Kaplan pipe failure, exciter rub on 2 different units. What's the root cause? At the end of the disassembly and reassembly of the Kaplan pipe, we weren't sure what the root cause was, and that was pretty disappointing because we're not sure. We wanted to put the unit back in a manner that it would run without another issue. During the process of investigating the B9 stator rub, we had the B6 stator rub. But fortunately, in the last couple of weeks, we think we've identified what the root cause is. That root cause has to do with a new sole plate design. So what's the sole plate? It's kind of a foundation that the stator sits on. Our past stators were rigidly fixed within the concrete, and as the generator heated up, that stator would flex and expand in a non-uniform manner, and that caused wear and tear over time, as well as a non-uniform air gap. And so with our new design, we put a new foundation system in so the stator could expand and contract radially uniformly across that height of that stator. And so what we identified is that these keys, these in this photo here, the keys are these devices. They're kind of wedges that help allow that stator to expand and contract uniformly radially. And what we found is that those on several of the sole plates were not installed and manufactured as the engineer intended. And so it was locking up on one side, and so it was just expanding out one side only. And so that is what caused both the stator rubs on B9 and B6. So what caused the Kaplan pipe issue? So what we found here, this is just kind of showing some of the remedial work that we did. We took those wedges, very precise measurements. We identified that those surfaces weren't as flat and had the right surface finishes as they should be per design. And so this is some work here. There's bluing on that surface to verify if it's in contact properly with those different surfaces. And here the folks are grinding on that to make sure that they work. They've done this work again. B9 is up and running. B6 is up and running. And we've verified through instrumentation that we're getting uniform expansion and contraction. And we're monitoring all sole plates to make sure that we're getting equal movement on all of them.
Brett?
Yep.
How many sole plates from that manufacturer have we installed?
So we've installed them on 10. And we went back and looked at 10, and they were installed properly. And on 9 and 6 is the other two installations. And so, but yeah, that design will be carried forward. And we've got revised procedures, and Andres and their crews have gone through all that, and now they understand properly how to do that work.
Thank you.
So what caused the Kaplan pipe failure? So now we've learned that issue with the stator was going on before the Kaplan pipe failure, not just after it was reassembled. And so what we believe has gone on is the stator was growing one way, and then on top there's another device here. This is called the upper bracket, which holds that excitation assembly, and it's bolted separately to a different structure. And so those two need to be able to both expand and contract. And this top structure was actually bolted down hard and not allowed to expand and contract. And so when the stator moved out one side, it caused that Kaplan pipe bushing to move over. And so that was contacting hard, got hot, seized up, caused the Kaplan pipe failure. So that's what we believe to be the root cause analysis, using Andrit's review, internal district review, third-party consultant. So we think going forward, we understand those issues, and we know what to do to help.
So I have a question.
If not that happen in the future.
So how much of this, Brett, is reinventing the wheel, or how much of this can you look to other hydro projects and other Kaplan, you know, other parts and issues and get help? Or is this is so unique that we have to come up with our own unique fix for it? Because that's impressive if that's what you're doing.
Yeah, so going forward, we work a lot with John Yale, and I work a lot with other utility owners through a number of different organizations like CIADI, et cetera. And so these new designs, we were some of the ones that came up with them. Other utilities are using them as well. And so we're able to share what's working, what's not working with these different designs. And so we have been sharing Kaplan pipe issues, sole plate issues. The sole plate concept was kind of originated at Rocky Reach, and that looked successful there, and so that's why we carried it on to Rock Island.
Wow, that's great. It's impressive.
So as I showed in that one schedule, we kind of had an open horizon, we thought, to work on B1 to B4, not much work. And that lower part of that schedule I showed, well, a bunch of things have happened. So again, B6 took a year longer, so that pushed B7 into our window. We've had these number of failures that are all into this B1 to B4 window. So we had to first understand what happened on B6. So we did a very extensive lessons learned with our engineering staff, our district forces that are helping us do the work with Andritz. We wanted to try to confirm that we could get back to a one-year schedule because we've purchased new rotors, so that shouldn't cause an issue. We didn't go and buy new head covers for the rest of them. We probably wish we would have, but that's why we have the slight delay in that. But Andritz learned a lot and has better organized their work, and we've been tracking it very closely through project controls. And on their B7 work, they're about 6 months into it, and they're tracking right on schedule with everything so far. So again, we came up with about 8 pages of lessons learned. All of those are being implemented, and so we're seeing the results on Unit B7. So their current situation, Dan Garrison led an effort throughout the company to look at all the different facets that Powerhouse One affects, from FERC and fish and ecology, other work at the district, power marketing, and we evaluated, okay, what should we do for the future with these schedules? We have HCP check-in as a strategic initiative. How should we manage that? And so what I'm going to show towards the end is kind of what we think is our path forward. So some of those leading objectives in coming up with that schedule were, we want to resolve all the issues we had. So at the time that we had looked at some of that evaluation, we didn't know what the root cause was yet for the state of Rebs and Kaplan pipe failure, but we do now. But we wanted to allow time to evaluate those things. We wanted to use all of our lessons learned and invoke those. One of our lessons learned was having many years between doing unit rehabs. So Andritz had pretty much new staff when they came to site, new project managers, new site foreman, new quality, etc. And because the last time we did a unit was 2012. On our side, we had quite a few different staff as well. And so what we're recommending is that we go sequentially and not have another big break in the work. We've also tried to establish a schedule that's got some contingency in it so that we know things happen, not try to get too unrealistic. We see in the HPI that when you try to set some expectations that folks know that aren't realistic, then you don't get a lot of buy-in in that. And then when you're having changes, then that's where errors happen, when you're changing from, we've done these enough now, we know what's pretty much going to happen, we know what the risks are, and so we need to incorporate those and set it up for the best way of success. So we've got schedules now that we think do that. We've also set it up to give us the maximum unit availability for our HCP check-in. We are proposing to move that out by 1 year so that we can get as many units rehabbed and ready for that as possible.
And I just add, that was reviewed with our environment group, and they actually felt that that was probably a good move to try to true up with the Rocky Reach drawing as well.
So this is what we're recommending going forward with our schedule. So we currently, again, unit B6 is in operation, B9 is in operation, B7 is under rehab. And so again, we built in some contingency. We know we've got this head cover issue on 7. And so it's a little bit more than a year as what's the plan is. So it's about 16 months. We've allowed some time. Operations needs to do some work on B5 and B8, some maintenance work. That work's been put off and put off and put off, hoping that we would get to it for rehab. Because of all these issues, we've taken much more time. We think it's prudent to go in there, inspect those units, know the condition, get some maintenance work done so that those will last until they're rehabbed. So we have some uncertainty left in our execution of our B1 to B4 project. So B4 is underway. We need to work with Andritz on what's the schedule for the remaining units and how that interrelates between going ahead and going forward with the B5 and B8 without a break in there. Again, our major lessons learned was to try to keep those going sequentially so that we don't lose continuity with knowledge and consistent vendors, etc. So here in words is what I kind of described from that previous slide. So there are some cost impacts. So the schedule has been disrupted. We have proposed to do some different things with that B4 to B1 contract. So as part of that schedule evaluation, here was some items that were considered in that. The district did assess liquidated damages for late completion for what the contractor was responsible for on B6. Again, through lessons learned, we're hoping that neither party has to suffer through liquidated damages on B7. We do know we have extra costs on B7 to purchase a new head cover. It's about $500,000. We're working with Ondritz on the Kaplan pipe repair and what's the equitable share of those costs for that. B6 and B9 stator moves, that's all the responsibility of the contractor, as well as any outstanding punch list items that might come up in the future on those two units. So we've projected that B1 to B4 costs could likely be higher because we're not able to work on all the units at the same time. And as we work on them in relation to working on B5 and B8, it's actually more work in the powerhouse in terms of contract man hours to do a B5 and one of the B1 to B4 units as it was to do the three B1 to B4 units. So there's extra work going on in the powerhouse. So again, our schedules, I talked about trying to make sure they're realistic, and particularly in the area of safety. And so we're allowing some more time to spread those man hours out as opposed to trying to condense them and stack them up. So we've allowed in the B4 schedule for Ondritz to have more time to do that and to try to fit it in where there's not big peaks in their work on, they're currently working on B7 so that they can use efficiencies but not cause an unsafe work environment by trying to do too much by being held to too rigid of timelines with their contracts. So with B1 to B4, again, we're working on the negotiation of when those will start and finish, but we're kind of anticipating about an 18-month schedule extension. However, the B5 to B8 work, we think we can pull in and get done about a year sooner.
Brett, I want to interject here because there's one piece that I think we want to cover a little bit more, and I'm going to ask you to do that. Just reflect for a moment on this whole picture. B5 through 10 are essentially the same units. B10 up and running, been running for a few years, the refurbishment seems to have gone fine. Run into problems with 6 and 9, both the Kaplan pipe failure and then the exciter rub. And so now we're trying to figure out where to go. Part of the reason that there's been so much uncertainty here is without that root cause analysis, you're left with the question of, so where are we going with B7, 5, and 8 here until we understand what caused these problems? So more recently, we're getting some real clarity around that. And in fact, have even put in place the biggest, most important fix for C9, which has allowed us to, B6 and 9, which allows us to operate those units. But Brett, you mentioned the vibration issue, which is still outstanding. Would you just take a second and describe that one as to where that stands?
Yeah. So again, we don't believe the vibration issue caused either the stator rub or the Kaplan pipe failure, but it's still that nagging. What is that? Tick, 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 what is that that you hear out the window? And so we're working with Ondritz. They've got a team of some of their best folks internationally. We're currently working right now collecting data to try to identify what that could be. And we've agreed between the companies that we're going to work on that and figure out what that is and resolve that before we actually endeavor to take on B5 or B8. And if it's something that we need to change in the design, then we can do that before we go on with that other work. If it's something that's just a characteristic, but it's not adverse, but at least we know what it is, then we can also move on with continuing with not having to change anything. So that's one of the prerequisites to going forward is we're going to solve that with them when we have up until the mid next year to work out what that is.
You come back and let us know what that is when you.
You bet. Absolutely. So that's all Dan and I had. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Wow, that's a lot. You're not bored with your job, are you?
No.
Never will be.
Nope.
Okay.
I will say we feel a lot better now that we feel like we're getting to the bottom of this B6 and B9 problem. It's been really troubling to us. So hopefully this is it. And you can get the sense that the vibration issue, the assumption is probably not a big problem, but we need to nail that one to be sure.
And again, we're not sure that it's an issue, but it's something that was different than 10. And so we want to understand that. Part of this is that we've implemented a new bearing design, a new water lubricated, so that we could get away from oils and greases. And so trying to understand, there's not any published standards or guidelines on these water lubricated bearings. That's where we're seeing this vibration issue that is different to us than 10, and it's got a water lubricated bearing, and it's also different than our old style bearing. So we're trying to do that. So we've actually got three technical experts in the industry, and we're going to actually work to try to establish new typical guidelines and standards for water lubricated bearings, because that's going to be necessary as other operators like the Corps need to move to this non-greased and lubed type of bearing systems.
Brett, are they using that water lubricated bearings over in Europe, Norway, or somewhere?
Yes. Yep. Those have been a standard for some time.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we able to get any data from their use over there?
That's where there's the most information on them. Okay. And they typically have a little bit different size machines. A lot of their applications are much smaller diameter and smaller machines. Yeah. And so that's kind of the extrapolation. And they use a ceramic coating on a lot of those, which is what we actually used at Chelan. That's a different type of unit, but higher speed.
So great.
And our team has visited there to be able to gather information about it.
Good.
Yep.
Yeah, I think a commissioner needs to go next.
Yeah, it was great. Dan and I went, and it was, what, May, and there was still snow on the ground.
Any other thoughts, questions?
I'll just close with the thought that so in our third quarter performance review, you'll see that we are behind with respect to capital spend for this year and some of the schedule items. The biggest driver with respect to the underspend in the hydro arena is basically the Rock Island issues that we're dealing with.
Gentlemen, thanks, and thanks for being under an hour.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Thank you.
It very much. Item four.
Next up, I want to get to the quarterly financial review and investment report. Mark Mullins and Heather Ireland will be presenting.
Good morning. Mark Mullins, Director of Planning, Risk, and Analytics. And to my right is?
Heather Ireland, Lead Treasury Analyst.
So today we'll be presenting our Q3 financial review and also our 2019 operational plan of finance. This presentation does support a number of resolutions that require quarterly reporting to the board on compliance with our long-range district financial policies, our business line financial policies, and our investment policies, as well as the balanced scorecard objective of maintaining strong financial stewardship. So what we will cover today, we'll go through our financial highlights, and I would like to recognize Craig Kuntz for putting this presentation together. You'll be hearing from him this afternoon with the budget presentation. He's been super busy, so appreciate his work. We'll go through our financial highlights, our third quarter results. Of course, that's pending annual financial review. We'll look at our five-year forecast and our 2019 operational plan of finance that Heather will present, along with our quarterly investment report. There's no action required today. This is an update only. And there is additional information in the appendix, but we will not cover that today. So our key highlights, our bottom line results are better than budget. We did in Q3 with a bottom line of $77.4 million versus a budget of $53.5 million. So $23.9 million better than budget, combination of higher revenues and lower expenses. Our combined district metrics are meeting our targets, and we are recommending we stay the course with our strategic goals, which is reinvesting in assets and people, reduce debt, and continue with our public power benefit. So getting into some of the more specifics on our income statement, looking at service revenue, slightly better than budget. We did have some colder weather in Q1 that is contributing to 100% of budget usage, retail usage. so better there. Our net wholesale revenue is slightly below budget. We did have some reduced flow expectations in Q3, primarily due to the early runoff. We did have a Lake Chelan outage due to the work with the surge tank that wasn't considered as part of the budget. So those are the primary drivers. There are some offsetting factors associated with our 2017 slice, which was done after the budget was set last year. So there's incremental revenue associated with that as well. On the hydro long-term contract, revenue is better than budget. We did receive and retain Alcoa surplus proceeds of $10 million in July and August due to some price spikes. As you recall, when the surplus is below their net cost, they pay the shortfall. When the surplus is greater than the net cost, then we retain that difference. This is partially offset by lower production costs at 88%. Other operating revenue is better than budget. We do have the variable piece of our real-time agreement. There's some benefits associated with that price volatility between the day-ahead market and real-time prices. We also have FEMA proceeds that we received earlier in the year with the 2015 Chelan Complex fire, and also some admin fees that we receive from Alcoa as we sell their surplus on their behalf. Total revenues are forecasted to be $14 million better than budget at the end of the year. On the expense side, our operating expenses are below budget, primarily due to hydro O&M at 82% of spend. They are expected to catch up to 94% by the end of the year, but that is the primary driver. On the non-operating net expense, that's better than budget. We have had some higher customer contributions associated with that, and then higher interest earnings on higher cash balances. Total net expenses are forecasted to be below budget by $13 million. So bottom line, as I mentioned, higher revenues and lower expenses are contributing to a year-to-date of being better than budget by $24 million. We are forecasted to be at $99 million bottom line at the end of the year. This is $27 million better than budget. If you compare that to our Q2 forecast, where we're looking at $12 million better, the primary driver is the Alcoa surplus proceeds that we were able to retain. On the capital side, for all the reasons you just heard about, is our primary driver at Rock Island, but we are behind pace. There was the B1 through B4 modernization project. A lot of that money has been deferred to 2019 and 2020, also with some of the facilities upgrades at Rock Island, and also the B7 is getting pushed into 2019 as well. So our current expectations is that we're going to spend about 70% of our budget at the end of the year. As Brett and Dan just mentioned, there's still a lot of moving parts associated with that schedule. So at this point in time, we're forecasted to be at $98.5 million or $41 million below our capital spend. Cash, for all the reasons mentioned, our positive bottom line, lower capital spending, and also the deferred capacity reservation payment that we received from Alcoa has increased our cash balance by $64 million. We are expected to be better than budget at year-end at $574 million. At the end of Q3, we're at $575 million. The debt is right in line with budget. We did execute our Q2 and Q3 $24 million reductions. Our debt balance at the end of the year will be $513.5 million. Looking at some of our operating metrics year-to-date, and this is not a cost-of-service calculation, but really just looking at the cost of generation and getting the power to the homes and businesses across the county. The metrics will vary from quarter to quarter. There is some seasonality. There's some variability among rate classes, so this is just a high-level look. But you can see we are better than budget for electricity delivered cost. Power production costs are better than budget. Power distribution costs are also better than budget, primarily due to lower operating expenses. If you look in the second box at the bottom, you can see the plants are all operating expenses are below year to date. And similarly on the distribution system, they're about 95% at this point in time. We do have slightly higher generation production, which also contributes, and slightly higher retail usage, which contributes to that metric. On the other business lines, water cost per 1,000 gallons, slightly higher than budget, about 6 cents. We did have some additional pump repairs needed that were unplanned, putting that slightly above budget for the year. Wastewater cost per ERU is better than budget, primarily due to operating expenses being lower than planned. This is a 12-month rolling average, but our fiber cost per active premises is slightly higher than budget. We did have a shift to O&M work from capital, and our operating expenses are only slightly above budget. So more specifically, looking at our bottom line results, from a forecast perspective, as mentioned, we're expected to end the year at $99 million versus a $72 million budget. More specifically, the service revenue, we have higher retail usage. We did increase our load forecast, which is benefiting that segment. Net wholesale revenue is slightly below. As I mentioned, there's a Lake Chelan outage that wasn't considered as part of the budget. Hydro long-term contract revenue, we have the surplus proceeds. We're also recognizing $3 million of the deferred capacity reservation payment, as well as the admin fees are contributing to that. Other operating revenue, so we have the real-time agreement that we were mentioning earlier, which is a benefit in addition to the FEMA that I just mentioned earlier.
So that $3 million recognition on Alcoa, that's essentially a recognition over a six-month period?
Over a six-month period. Okay. Going forward, we'll recognize about $6 million per year throughout the end of the contract. Mention operating expenses are down about $8 million. Primary driver is hydro O&M. Depreciation and tax expense right in line with budget, and the non-operating activity, we have some benefits associated with higher earnings on cash. Looking at this a little bit differently from our business line perspective, the cost-based activity, of course, is driven by all the things I've already mentioned. The market-based activity, they also benefit from the lower production costs as well from a margin-based perspective. The retail gap is slightly lower than we expected at this time of the year. Fiber and telecom is right in line with budget. And the water is a little bit better than budget this time of the year. They did have some contribution income associated with Stimmelt distribution. So again, our bottom line at $99 million. Looking at the capital expenditure side, you'll see a trend here through year-to-date. We're certainly lagging in our spending, a little above in water and wastewater, but we expect to get back in line with budget by the end of the year. Rock Island is where the material dollars are. As we mentioned, a lot of activity on there, deferring projects out into 2019 and 2020. I will note with Lake Chelan, we still are projecting 122% spend of budget. We're not sure if we'll need a budget revision for that or not. We're still waiting for some bills to come in on some breaker work. And we did have some additional expenditures on a dam deformation project that was spent in 2018 versus 2017. At the end of the year, we're expected to be at about 70% of spend, so up from our 60% that we're up at year to date. From a cash flow perspective, estimated earned funds from operations, $111 million. This is our bottom line result, add back non-cash items. Of that $111, we're spending $51 million on capital. We reduced debt by $24 million. We reduced our payables by $34 million, and we did give that cash receipt to Alcoa on the deferred capacity reservation. So we've added $64 million to our cash reserves, ending the Q3 at $575. Looking at what makes up the balance, we have almost $400 million in unrestricted fund. You'll note the Strategic Facilities Fund is at $50 million. We are paying down the DRC CRC funds as we pay as we go capital for all the work that we have at the hydros. We add in the other restricted funds around our bond reserves, self-insurance, and other power contract items. We're at $575 at the end of Q3. So for our quarterly reporting requirement on our financial policies, you will note there is some yellow. We are still meeting our financial metrics, but in our resolution in 2017 when we went to the board, we did identify that we would communicate to the board when we are within 10% of those metrics. So this is consistent with board guidance around our debt philosophy, but in 2022 our action plan, which is the other requirement in that resolution that we would bring to the board, is to issue external debt in 2022. I would like to highlight that this is based on these assumptions and this forecast. So as you know, things can change quickly. But I would note our strong liquidity in 2018 at $490 million, We're intending on fully utilizing those cash reserves, which brings us to that 2022 timeframe where we have to issue debt based on this forecast. I do want to highlight our debt ratio. We did meet the 2019 target by being below in 2018 at 34.1. We do progress in this metric, continuing to decrease to 23% in 2022, which is lower than 2021 because we do have some planned principal reductions as well that is continuing to reduce our debt. So our plan of action with issuing debt will also help our days cash on hand metric. You'll notice our bottom line is $99 million once again, but this does decline over time throughout this forecast window down to $55 million. One other highlight is our debt outstanding at 514 at the end of 2018, pushing that down to $372 million at the end of this forecast window. Our individual business line financial metrics, again, yellow means that we're within that 10% threshold. We're still meeting the target, but within that 10%. Our cash reserves on the water business line in 2022 were just below our target of $1.25 million. There's some capital projects in 2022 and 2023 that are driving that cash need. Our course of action for that one is to address that during the strategic planning cycle that we'll engage in next year. On the wastewater business line, our operating expense coverage is not meeting the metric. We're at 86% in 2019, and this is driven by a fairly large O&M project that's putting that down below the 100%. 2020 through 2022, we're pretty close to the 100%. And looking at our integrated electric business, these are test metrics that we're continuing to monitor to learn a little bit more about what they are telling us. So the yellow is indicating where we're not meeting the metric, but what it's indicating is that our electric revenues may not be meeting all of our expected costs going forward. I would like to highlight the retail rate support, which is our gap versus the market-based margin. If you look into 2021 and 2022, the market-based margin is slightly below our retail rate support needs and continuing on with 2022. So these metrics may change as we continue to use them, but just wanted to create that awareness. And I'll turn it over to Heather, and she can talk about our 2019 operational plan of finance.
Thanks, Mark. For the operational plan of finance, what we are doing is continuing to anchor to the board-affirmed long-term debt philosophy, which is to manage debt to create financial flexibility that supports low and stable electric rates, even if lower than expected financial results are experienced. Our operational plan of finance is the how we do that. It translates the philosophy and our planning strategies into forecasted actions. We do review and revise this plan at least annually with continual evaluations to ensure that we're meeting objectives with optimal results for our customer owners. This 2019 version for our operational plan of finance is primarily just a refresh of prior years, and it addresses both our internal and external debt-related needs. For the 2019 detailed actions, these are the plans that are currently in the 2019 proposed budget. We do intend to continue scheduled principal payments, as Mark mentioned. We also do have a small, slight acceleration plan for 2019. It's moving forward an interest and principal payment by about 6 months. That helps us achieve some savings and also supports our coverage calculation. We do also have some new debt planned for 2019. That's specifically related to an opportunity for some low-interest financing through the state that is to support the Peshastin wastewater project. We also have some potential refinancing actions to monitor and evaluate in 2019, and I'll talk about that just a little bit more on the next slide. Beyond 2019, for our general and broad paths, we intend to continue those planned principal payments over time and also begin issuing new debt gradually into the future. Again, as Mark mentioned, current forecast for that time frame of when we would need new revenue bonds would be in 2022. That's included in this forecast. And you'll notice throughout the end of this time frame through 2027, the issuance of new debt and the repayment of existing debt balance each other out mostly. There's a continued gradual decline in our debt ratio, even with issuances of new debt. focusing more on those detailed actions that are planned for 2019. We do have some internal loans and transfers that we would plan for. The first of those is related to our long-term hydropower sales contracts. Some of those plus charges related to those contracts support a portion of pay-as-you-go capital, and recently have supported all of our pay-as-you-go capital for our hydro facilities. But over the long term, it would not be anticipated that that would occur. There would be anticipated to be a blend of pay-as-you-go capital along with some internal or external borrowing needs. In 2019, we are forecasting that Rock Island will need funding beyond those pay-as-you-go capital charges. An internal loan from accumulated reserves in our financing facility system can meet those capital funding needs. Using internal funds when available and economically feasible helps support our debt leverage and coverage calculations and avoids external borrowing costs. We do plan to come back to the board with specific loan terms next year for your approval, and the timing of that will depend on the pace of capital spending at Rock Island. We also are planning before year end a hydro transfer to align those power sales contract funds, which have already been received, with our capital spending plans. The transfer has no external impacts and it is a below the line shift simply between the hydro systems. There would be no impact to operating expenses or revenues. It would only impact the bottom line internally between those hydros. In addition to these internally focused plans, we also continue to monitor the bond markets for refinancing opportunities, and we see that there may be some potential in 2019 to achieve savings with a bond refinancing. We're going to continue to evaluate that, and if favorable, we will be back to the board with some options and to request potential approval. We also will, as mentioned, continue our planned debt repayments throughout the year in 2019. Shifting gears from our debt portfolio to our investment portfolio, our Q3 2018 quarterly investment report, we are meeting all of our objectives and compliance metrics, so all good news there. We're also continuing to experience improved total earnings, and those returns are being driven by a combination of higher cash reserves and increased market interest rates. The full detail for our quarterly investment report is in the appendix.
Thank you, Heather. So we'll wrap up with some key messages for Q3. As we've realized through Q3 year-to-date, we do have strong financial results at $77 million. We are forecasted in the year at $99 million, so another strong year forecasted. As mentioned before, our revenues are declining over time, so we are, through this planning horizon, our bottom line is decreasing to $55 million in 2022. I'd also like to highlight that we have very strong cash reserves at this time, but we are, through our significant capital spending, we're going to fully utilize those cash reserves. And as we've discussed, in 2022, the forecast indicates that's when we would initiate external borrowing. So our long-term financial metrics with that borrowing are on track with that new debt issuance in the next year, five-year planning horizon. Our recommendation is to continue to stay the course with our strategic goals, which are reinvest in assets and people, reduce debt, and continue with the public power benefit. I'll open it up for any questions.
Thoughts, comments, questions?
Great report.
Great report. Yeah. Happy to be here.
That was quite a surprise on that spike in energy prices this summer.
Yes, definitely. It was pretty significant in July and August.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming back to the same.
Commissioners, if you're ready, we'll move to agenda item 5.
Item 5.
Recall that there has been work done for many, many years, probably more than 10, on a new transmission line that would help to connect up some of the projects here in the Mid-Columbia, joint project, Bonneville, Grant, Chelan, and Douglas. it's reached a point where it's time for it to come back and be reviewed by the board, and Chad Bowman will be doing that for us.
Good morning. I'm Chad Bowman, Director of Transmission and Compliance. So to start out, just really, where is this project, Point Line Project, Rapids to Columbia Transmission Line? It's a new 230 kV line that runs from Douglas's Rapid Switchyard right here, which is the vicinity of Rock Island. It follows this segment D, segment E route down, crosses the river, comes down really in this corridor where there are many other transmission lines, the area we kindly refer to as the Sherwood Forest of Chelan County. Comes down here and then crosses the river back to Bonneville's Columbia substation. So that's really the project that I'll be talking about and where it's located. Project update, Steve says we've really reached a point to bring this back to the board to update on where things are at. The last time we were here was in 2016 when the 30% design estimate was completed. And really today, seeking a what we're colloquially referring to as a nod of concurrence to move forward with this project and add funds to the existing project budget. Really, this new transmission line provides a third, what it really does is provides a third 230 kV connection between the Rocky Reach area and Columbia Switchyard, an area that BPA has identified in the past as an area subject to transmission congestion, accounts for some work that Douglas and Grant has already done, and since we're all sharing in the cost, provides a solution that's much less costly than an individual solution. This project has been going on for quite some time, as you can see by the timeline. Like I said before, really in 2012, the cost allocation construction funding agreements were set and approved by the board. In 2014, late 2014, the environmental permitting kicked off and really reached a conclusion then in 2016 that included public outreach by Bonneville, Douglas, on those routes that are showing up there that led to the selection of the preferred route. In 2016, Bonneville and Douglas completed the 30% design. At that time, the design estimate was $17.8 million, which leads us to today, where we're here at essentially the 90% design estimate, which is now $23.9 million to complete this project. So what's changed since 2016? I think really we're at that 90% design stage. Per the agreement we all executed back in 2012, we all have the opportunity to execute an off-ramp since the costs have risen more than were contemplated in that agreement. You don't have to. It's really an option to get out of the contract altogether or to come back to the table with the parties and attempt to renegotiate that if they're amenable. And BPA continues to negotiate on some of the cultural aspects of the project. So essentially, what is that project? It's that 230 transmission line between Rapids and Columbia. It's about 9 miles long, and then there's station work at each end. I've said before, it's really that single utility planning approach, what is best for the area, as if all four entities owned all the transmission, what is it you would do that provides the least cost, most benefit solution. We continue to believe that it's construction of this transmission line. Really, the construction and ownership responsibilities, Douglas by and large is doing most of the work here, work at Rapids. Work on the transmission line itself. Bonneville's doing a little bit of work in their station. And then Chelan and Grant are funding partners. So where we're at, spent along the way quite a bit on environmental permitting costs. Chelan's share of those costs has been about $800,000. The finding of no significant impact, like I said, was published back in 2016. And we're at this point where the detailed design estimate is, again, that $23.9 million, which is more than the off-ramp amount in the contract, which allows the parties the opportunity to exercise that, should they so choose. By and large, two big drivers of that cost impact between where we're at now and where we were in 2016. A significant component in there, $1.4 million for cultural monitoring during construction to ensure that construction goes okay and doesn't impact some of the cultural sites identified during the environmental permitting process, and a significant increase in the cost of steel in the last couple of years. So it'll be a steel pole line resistant to fire. Very good thing to have in the sagebrush down there, but steel has increased significantly in the last year or so. So back in 2016, we took a detailed financial look at this project at the $17.8 million price cap. We looked at really two components there. The first is that we believe through our studies that the addition of this line will save the district half an average megawatt per year. So what are those energy costs worth over the life of the project with a 7% rate of return, essentially an NPV at zero type analysis. The worksheet that Kirk Carlson put together then solves for, how many hours of generation reduction does this project avoid at Rocky Reach? Again, part of the congestion issues between Rocky Reach and Columbia is that at times the reliability coordinator will call up and say, you need to reduce Rocky Reach generation by some amount, usually because of contingency events, other things like that going on. So we believe this project, since it's constructed of steel, adds that third 230 kV segment between Rocky Reach and Columbia will reduce those amounts of required generation reduction. So in 2016, we solved that backwards at 5.6 hours on average per year, which seemed to make sense. We rerun that same analysis in 2018, and we came up with a lesser amount of only we only need to avoid 2.3 hours per year of generator reduction. Primarily, the difference between the 2016 and 18 analysis is that both used energy costs, both used the current forward price curve, but the 2018 analysis utilized the addition of a carbon price. Since there's now a forward carbon price, that's really the driver of why this project makes more sense economically now at a higher price tag than it did a couple of years ago. So the next steps really are to seek your concurrence to move past the off-ramp, and then we would align the project budget with the current project estimate, which would be a $1.5 million project increase for 2019, accomplished as part of the normal budgeting process. Questions?
I would just add, I think there are some strategic benefits to this project as well in terms of creating flexibility. Should there be more generation that would show up in this area in the next few years, it's helpful to have a project like this. And so the straight economics make sense, but then when you think about how the system might evolve through time, there's some benefits that are hard to quantify that show up here. Mm-hmm.
Commissioners, your thoughts?
One question. If one of the partners decides to utilize the off-ramp, what happens with that share? Is it then spread upon the remaining three?
It's then up to the remaining funders to determine if they want to continue moving the project forward.
Thank you.
Just a comment based on what Steve said, sort of a corollary that I use in my analysis of saying we need to move forward to at this moment in time or a little bit back, half of the cost to deliver a box of apples to the port of Seattle was incurred from Issaquah to the port because of congestion. Mm-hmm. And so there's a cost to congestion. And it's congestion gets worse, the cost gets worse.
Yep.
So understood.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. That's a really great analogy.
Another way to ask the question, is there any opposition to moving forward?
Right. There's no affirmative action required to move forward. We've already approved the agreement. So.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Thank you.
On.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item six.
Okay. On a quarterly basis, we provide an update on the district performance plan. And so we're at that point to review where we're at. Recall our process here is we don't review all of the items. We review the things that have significantly changed since the last review, which would be things that have changed color, and in particular those that have also been completed and have been turned blue. So you'll hear a series of things that have been downgraded and some of which we've gotten done. So we're going to start with Mike Coleman.
Okay. Commissioners, Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecommunications. I'm going to talk about Objective 1, Item A, the fiber expansion premises passed. Even though that did not change color from quarter to quarter, it's still an update that I wanted to provide. If you remember back to quarter two, we had run into some delays and we had resource prioritization issues affecting both my team and John's team. And so we revised that number to 938. Year to date, we're sitting at 600 premises passed. We're still optimistic that we're going to make the 938, but it requires everything to fall into place perfectly. We have some permit issues with the U.S. Forest Service that's affecting us. So we're working through those now. We also went through the process and looked at the complete picture for NESC compliance, and between John's team and my team, we're making good progress on that and expect to have an easier time of it next year and over the future years. But for 2018, we are still looking at the 938 and hoping everything falls into place, doing everything possible to make it fall into place so that we can achieve that lower number for 2018.
Thank you.
Mike, can you just remind me of the deferral of Mary Canyon, what that was about?
On the Chumstick Mary Canyon, Chumstick has to be finished before Mary Canyon could, I'm sorry, Mary Canyon is separate from Chumstick, but they were kind of tied together because of the NESC. In addition, Mary Canyon is where we were waiting on a Forest Service permit. We have escalated that within the Forest Service. They have told us that it's approved and waiting signature, but we still haven't seen it as of today.
Thank you.
Felicity Saberhagen, business advisor, here representing District Services. Our first one is for the outreach to the solicitation of new projects for 2021 for the Public Power Benefit Program. We're going to continue to use the pool of projects that were identified during our strategic planning, so no additional outreach is necessary.
Felicity, I think I might have skipped one there, which was mine. Thank you for trying to take me off the hook for one that had turned red.
Yeah, by all means.
We've been trying to get moving on the plan for strategic planning for 2020 to 2024. We had a target to have the conceptual piece done by the end of third quarter. We didn't hit that target. We have mostly caught up, though, and I'm expecting that we will be able to finish that work before the end of the year. So looks like we've got more materials to come forward, and the board, of course, finished its work with respect to mission, vision, and values at the recent board workshop. So I think we're going to end up being on track.
I'll Also on public power benefits, we were able to complete the design for the fish viewing windows at Rocky Reach Visitor Center, or the Discovery Center as it's now being called. You all received a presentation in the second quarter, and that final design is now complete.
And if I could just ask managing directors to identify the number and the items so our board can keep up with where we are too.
John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. I have the next one that is on page 2. It's under G3, and that refers to the customer survey results and how that has been incorporated into business planning for 2019 as appropriate. So just noting that business plans are complete, so any input has been provided and reflected.
Next one's mine, Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I'm on the top of page 4. It's objective 2D, and this is our hydro capability metric. We had a goal of 74% at the end of the third quarter this year, and we are running at 72.6%. Main reasons for that are the C1 unplanned outage associated with the trunnion bushings, and then the issues you heard about this morning with B6 and B9, with those outages longer than what we had planned.
Dave Nelson, business advisor here representing Greg Carrington and Energy Resources today. Item I have first is E3. We've successfully completed the implementation of a pilot, energy management pilot with Confluence Health, and are looking to expand that to other commercial and industrial customers. Next item, under F, items 1 and 2 for our project to retrofit streetlights with LED technology throughout the county. The planning has now been completed, but it was completed after the deadline. Project is now being implemented, and we had planned to be completed by the end of this year, but due to some additional work, grounding work, adding to the scope of that project, and some other issues with the availability of contractors, that work has, the completion has been delayed into the first quarter of 2019.
I want to take a second and say that grounding work is something that's going to create some real value that we didn't understand at the beginning of the project. We had some challenges with respect to some of our lights not being appropriately grounded. So we've actually been able to add value in terms of the work that's going to be done.
We're now on page 5. I've got a few of them here in a row. Objective 2H4. This is to begin B3 disassembly by the end of third quarter. And the next one below it, number 5, is to begin B2 disassembly by the end by 12-1. You saw earlier the schedules on B1 through 4, and those are being extended out. That covers both of those. The next one is a completed item, item 2I1. You also heard about that this morning, the YouTube governors, MCM, Exciters, the electronics associated powerhouse too, were completed on time by the end of the third quarter. Then item 2K3, got conduct strategy. This is for our asset management program associated with our transmission system. Got our asset strategy in place on the transmission side this quarter.
John Stoll, I have the next one. It too will be under Customer Utilities Asset Management Program, page 5. It's L3, and that's develop a water system control valve strategy as part of asset management that has been completed.
Commissioners, on page 6, item M3 and also M4. The asset management plan for the fiber program, we did delay that into Q4 because of the resource constraints. As part of pulling new areas into the PPB to make that number this year, the revised number, we also impacted the resources that were working on this particular program. So that has been delayed. On the telecom asset management, it was also impacted, but we do plan. We completed the governance process, and we will do the input of the asset class systems, implementing of it in Q4.
Also on page 602, the asset management development of standards for our Parks Department has been combined with step three. So it was expected to be completed at year end, but this particular step is behind and past its deadline. Also on page 62, the seeking of the approval of the hydro licensing legislative initiative. As you are all aware, it has passed the Senate and has now also been signed by the President.
A quarter ahead of time, too.
I have two on page six under Q, Advanced Intelligent Grid Capabilities. Number one, we had plans to develop a meter data management pilot as of Q3 of this year. I think we're a bit optimistic with the cash to meter program that we're implementing now. It's a new version, so we're still working through the core customer information system. However, that's still on the plan to look into as we take interval data and run it through the meter data management system in the future. But we do not have a formal plan per se. The next one is in regard to having what I would call a roadmap on enhanced automated metering infrastructure functionality. We have done quite a bit of work, but we've also understood that until we go through and evaluate the responders that we will receive next year, we will get a better sense of what that plan would look like, timing, optionality around that. Next page, on number seven, we're under the NESC compliance program and pole attachment. Just would like to note on number two that we did complete the outreach to the pole attachers as part of the presentations we've given this past summer.
Next one is just below that, objective 2B1. This was to complete the Chelan Manson transmission line options associated with hardening our transmission system. You might recall the presentation on September 24th. Where those options were presented, and we're now working with distribution on customer outreach associated with that.
We're now on page eight. We're under the X, distribution planning, siting, and construction. The first one and two, just noting that these are complete. The lessons learned from the substation siting efforts that was delivered, as well as determining our priorities going into the next round of siting and acquisitions. We're all aware from some of the board updates, load updates, we've provided that information. Under three, progress on substation construction. We had a plan to be further down the road around with the what we're calling the OMI substation out in the old station area, as well as Leavenworth and Chelan. That has been impacted by the large load efforts that has competed for engineering resources. However, under D, we did meet the target of acquiring ENEAD substation land.
How long will that delay?
We're actively looking at our options right now. For one thing, we're bringing on more engineering support through consulting. As we work through some of the other projects around large loads, we expect that we can leverage some of those benefits and pick it up in 2019. Okay, and one more, and that's under the executing on our capital plans. You've just seen from the recent board update that we're a bit under. For customer utilities, we have a target of 90%. Our forecast as of this was about 87% was our estimate.
And good morning. This is Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial Risk Officer. And my first one to present today is below that as Y6, still on page 8. For the capital spending related to our information technology program. We are bouncing in and out right around our target, where we were at our target last quarter I did celebrate for a minute that we were where we were targeting to be, knowing that we were likely to fall below the target and remain there through year end. But it's a good news and not quite meeting the target story, where we were able to accomplish a large project for less than the cost by choosing a publicly available alternative rather than our own proprietary software. So that was the good news. But we are delayed in completing a few projects. But that has allowed us to also contemplate moving up a couple of our large server purchases. So we have them on order and are hoping that they will come in ahead of schedule. So that will get us closer to the target all in all. So may remain below, but taking appropriate action to try to get there by the end of the year.
Moving on to objective three on page nine. The first one, operating our fish spill targets. Q3 has completed, and we were able to operate at our targets throughout the time period. 3E, implementing our HCP tenure survival studies. It's coordinating with the Rock Island Group to determine whether or not we need to alter any dates on any of that work. And we were able to complete all of the milestones associated with that this calendar year. The 2019 Chelan River check-in, we also are complete as per our schedule, although that work will continue throughout 2019.
Next item is on page 11. Under objective four, G, one and two, the first two items have been postponed to actively participate in this electric markets development due to the work on the large loads. And so those first two items have been delayed and will not be completed this year. The third item was to evaluate and respond to RFPs for frequency response. We have completed and awarded a contract for the next 12-month period. And item four, we've moved back into the green as we are now working on a development of new product with the Western Systems Power Pool for California product. I guess I have the next one too at the top of page 12, item T1. We have completed meeting the minimum revenue requirement target for the five-year planning horizon.
And then right in the middle of page 12, we have a completion to report on part of maintaining our high bond ratings. We conduct a benchmarking exercise each summer just to make sure that we are still where we want to be and that our targets that we have the appropriate metrics in them. So we have completed that for this year and remain on track as planned. And then our business planning cycle that we have all been participating here, we are on track and have completed the first leg of that with our draft plans. And you'll see a lot more blue on that when we report next quarter as we completed that at the beginning of Q4.
We're on page 13. Item Q1, 2, and 3 have been postponed due to large load work.
Next one is mine. So this is one that we were planning to follow up on the work where we were looking at the least cost approach to greenhouse gas emissions, working with the public generating pool. We actually have changed our strategy there and decided, rather than expanding that to an economy-wide analysis, to instead focus more on a reliability-based analysis. If you go down the path of very heavy reliance on renewable portfolio standard, are you able to maintain regional reliability? And we've actually been able to get Northwestern, Vista, and Puget to join with us in that. That study is about 80% complete. Probably will be finishing it before the end of the year. So we didn't do what we thought we were going to do at the beginning of the year, but we found something that we think is actually going to be more valuable in terms of engaging the discussion about where are we going with clean energy standards, and we're on track to finish that. And by the way, we will be presenting that to the board probably after the first of the year sometime, working on schedules to get the consultant up here to visit.
Item right below that, item S1, happy to end my participation on a positive note. We've completed locking in 100%, 115% of the environmental attribute sales for this year.
Then I'd like to take you all the way to page 16. And right in the middle of the page with item L1. We have completed our filling our open positions related to our data analytics and business intelligence program, and this stretch goal was completed in Q3.
Next, we're on page.
On page 17, looking at N2, completing the physical access control project. This project was delayed to allow time to work on higher priority work. One of those included was the large loads, but in general, the also impacted were the by the work we were doing at the hydros.
The next one is O, under maintain and update utility service regulations and policies. We had two of them. One was to confirm or redefine our growth pace for growth strategy to consider things such as impact fees for funding infrastructure. The work on the cryptocurrency large loads has put that on the backseat, although we anticipate bringing that forward again in 2019. The second one, number two, is to review the high-density load implementation lessons learned and propose any customer policy regulation updates. Certainly that has been taken over by the cryptocurrency effort, although there are a lot of some commonalities that I think we will have some updated regs and policies as we seek to lift the moratorium. Work through that.
Okay, on page 18, moving down to item P, which was the district telecommunication systems improvement plans. We did complete item B, although it was complete after the original target date. The factory acceptance was completed, item C, in the third quarter. Microwave system replacement project number two, the substantial completion by Q3 was delayed, and the project completion is still on target, item D. So the good news with both of these projects, we had a real fear of early winter on the mountaintops affecting this project, and successfully after this report, but current, we have finished all of the microwave equipment installation on the mountaintop, so the weather is no longer a concern. If we have to go up there, all of the work will be inside. So we will stay on track there. They're currently doing the transition between the old microwave and the new microwave. So as that occurs, then they start in on the land mobile radio system, which the equipment has already been received. So both of these projects are now on track.
If I could interrupt for a moment. So there's a new thing here, and I've been looking for a moment to be able to describe it from what we've done in the past. So you'll notice that on Mike's 1B that it's marked as red, but we've added completed after deadline. So the reason for that is we've discovered a bit of a flaw in our process here, I would say, in that some of these, take this particular item, the key issue was, do we get this infrastructure installed by Q4? But we had an interim target, which was, did we get the design approved by Q2? So the design didn't get approved by Q2, but we think we're still on track to get the thing installed by the end of Q4. So how do you measure that? Well, we didn't hit the target, so it's red. But it's completed after the deadline, and the project as a whole is going to stay on track. So when we get to the totals at the end, we're going to show you a couple of different ways of thinking about this, which is where you've got something that that wasn't necessarily critical to completing the the project. It was an interim step along the way. It's still counted as red. But in full transparency, we're going to show you both red and then show you if the work gets done by the end of the year, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. Now, there are some other projects, like the B projects, where we didn't hit interim deadlines, but we might complete work by the end of the year. But for those, we've got to think about those differently because the scheduled date for that target really was important. We really needed to hit it. So we're going to think this through and do better next year in terms of the way we put these targets together.
And the last item that I have in that section, number three, the system disaster recovery feasibility study. We have delayed that into 2019. We had originally targeted it based on the original project schedules, but we don't want to do the full disaster recovery plan until after the system is implemented so that we have the latest design and other configurations to work from.
Next one's mine. Bottom of page 18, we've got objective 5R2, and this is our strengthening our cybersecurity program. And I know Kelly and Mike and I haven't talked about this, but the next three are the exact same thing, just reported three different times. So I might just cover those unless Mike and Kelly have anything they want to add. But this is the cyber assessment we did with the National Renewable Engineering Laboratory earlier this year, and our goal was to actually put together a gap analysis and a plan to address those gaps, and that was completed on the control system side, and my area of responsibility on the telecom side, Mike's, and on the business network, Kelly's. We all completed that third quarter.
Thank you, Kirk. So that takes us to page 20. And on item D there, under our implementing our mobile computing strategy, there was a mobile inspection pilot that we have put into yellow status. Our target was for that stretch goal to have that pilot going by 12-1, but we have identified a need for a software patch that needs to be done before we can do the mobile inspection pilot. So that may delay the completion of that stretch target, but that's why you see it as yellow rather than red, because it is stretch.
Bottom of page 21, item C3. Was completed. So we hope that this will streamline our abilities to reprice jobs as things change in the market. Item C4, this one was delayed because we had some new legislation come at us that felt like a higher priority. So we will likely not complete this one this year, but maintaining some hope by keeping it yellow. And then on page 22, items under E, the integrated talent management strategies. This was a relatively large effort that we were looking at in terms of getting ourselves and our workforce ready for the future. That was going to require quite a bit of senior management time. And so we have skinnied down that goal at direction with Steve, and are reducing the scope of the project. So each of these items that are under that, we're rethinking and trying to see whether and how we're going to try to meet those goals.
I think we probably could have added the words there around the cryptocurrency issue that was the driver for senior management team time.
And then on page 23, objective on the metrics, A3, the days away restricted and or transferred. As you know, all of those were pretty significant stretch goals for us that we set a few years ago, and we have danced in and out of a few of these. And so we're back above that target, which is in the wrong direction for this particular quarter.
Lorna, can I ask you to go back? I think there might be one that was missed. It was 6G on page 22 on the targeted hiring based on prioritized needs. That would change from green to yellow.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. So we have a few positions that people did get approved to recruit for before the October 1st deadline, but that they are not moving forward with actually recruiting for them. So it looks like we're going to fall short of that goal, but we will be above 80%. We just won't make 90%.
One of our keys was getting the jobs that were approved in last year's budget, really moving them through in the first quarter of this year, and that was achieved through a pretty intense effort on the part of HR. I think that's it. You'll notice that the total number of tracked items, how we're doing, we have about 69% of our goals that are being achieved based on the scoring where we assume even the ones that were being, that we didn't hit schedule date but then got the work done. If you don't count those, then we're at about 69%. If you include the number that are completed after the deadline, it adds about 4% to the total, so we end up at about 73% or so. I would just note that the one thing that's not in here, because at the beginning of the year we didn't know we were going to be doing this, is the cryptocurrency work. And so that certainly appears to be headed in the right direction, which is adoption of a rate before the end of the year. We're on schedule for that at least, and we'll see, based on the public comment, how we do over the course of the next month. But we're still headed towards a December 3rd date to bring that forward to the board. That's it.
Certainly highlights the impacts of things around the district.
It stretches through in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Very informative.
Yes.
You want to move forward with some things?
If you don't mind, I'd like to grab a couple of items, if I could, for manager items. Kirk didn't warn you about this, but you willing to do the Chelan update now?
Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. You recall we had a lot of work up at Chelan Powerhouse and the ancillary facilities up there this summer. Reported a couple of board meetings ago that we got one of the units back online and the work on inside the surge tank was completed. Just wanted to report back and let you know that we actually commissioned the second unit as well at the middle of October. And so that work, circuit breaker replacement, exciter replacement in the powerhouse, surge tank painting, overhaul work, turbine cavitation repair on both runners was all completed. Both units are back up and running. And so we just came in right at the deadline associated with the fish returning to the tail race and an outage on Chelan Rocky Beach number one line that Douglas was taking to do some upgrades on the other side. That was one of our contingency lines that we were keeping a close eye on, so we got all that work done just in time for all that stuff to take place. So just wanted to report that good news.
Good work. Very good.
Good. Do one more manager item, and then we'll break. So that is, we did have the leadership of the Senate Environment and Energy Committee here a week ago Monday, I guess a week ago today, and that went very well. We're really pleased with that. I really appreciate Senator Hawkins for organizing that, bringing them over here, giving them a chance to see us and see our facilities and talk about issues that are important to us. I think one of the things that was probably the most poignant moment for me was we spent a lot of time developing this work on least cost approach to greenhouse gas emissions reduction and thought we were going to need to describe it to them. And instead, they started off by talking about it and basically describing things in an accurate way of the work that had been done in terms of thinking through that's a framework for considering legislative alternatives, which had been our goal. Our hope was that we could actually influence the legislative process in that way, that if you brought facts to the table, it would make a difference. So what is it that
creates the best value. And one of the things that was clear from that work is that the first 80% or so of GHG emissions reduction in the electric sector you get for, I won't say a low cost, but for a cost that some might consider to be reasonable. But beyond 80%, it's a hockey stick. It gets really a lot more expensive. And they had clearly understood that and were describing to us how they recognized that that they needed to think hard about that last 20% and where they would go. So felt good about that, that appeared to have taken, and just the opportunity to be able to sit there and talk about the value of hydropower through the tour that they did of Rocky Reach and the opportunity that it creates to be able to achieve goals with respect to keeping a reasonable low-cost system, a reliable system, and a low-air-emitting system. That you really need hydropower in order to be able to do that. Felt like we had a good opportunity to deliver those messages and felt like they were heard, too. Good session, and glad they were able to come.
Yeah, I thought there was high interest in the in understanding of the importance of the Hydro Academy. And I think Kirk did a nice job taking them through that. So much appreciated. Once?
And with that, I think we prepared to take a let the other issues go till this afternoon.
All right. We will adjourn until 1 o'clock, where we will open with a hearing. Good afternoon, and welcome to Chelan County Board of Directors meeting. It is 1 o'clock, and all five commissioners are present. And so definitely we have a quorum. And we will start this afternoon with a public hearing with our regarding the first reading of our 2019 preliminary budget. And there will be certainly time for questions following. So I'm assuming introduction.
Just want to welcome Craig Coons, Deborah Bond to the table to provide this material.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Craig Coons, manager of strategic financial planning. With me is Deborah Bond, strategic financial planning analyst, who does a lot of the heavy lifting during the budget process. This will be the first of two scheduled public hearings. The next will be on November 19th. And what we'll cover today is the timeline, the strategic goals and initiatives, the initial results and highlights, and the next steps. There is no board action required today. This is just for information. Looking at our budget timeline, just a quick refresher. The business plans were finalized and presented on 10-1. We did have our budget overview on October 15th. We are here today, November 5th. This is our first formal public hearing on the budget. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we'll meet again on the 19th. And then we will come to the board on December 3rd and request a formal budget approval. As I've communicated before, our budget process is all around our strategic focus, and it's built around our initiatives and our business plans that were presented. And the foundation of those strategic initiatives and our budget is at the top of our balanced scorecard, which is customer owner satisfaction. We focus on our primary goals of reinvesting in our assets and people and keeping our debt ratio below 35% and continuing our public power benefit program. This will be a consistent theme throughout the presentation, but I want to show you, this will kind of anchor to the discussions we have this morning. We got a lot of investments going on out of our facilities. And these are some of our top projects you'll hear about during the presentation. We have a lot of work going on at Rock Island in regards to the hydro and some crane modernization. We continue with our Rock Island and Rocky Reach CM facilities upgrades, part of our strategic facilities planning work. We're continuing work at our Rocky Reach large unit repairs. We have quite a few investments in our new substations that are in process. And we're continuing work on our new customer information system. These are just a couple of the top significant investments and projects we have going on. There's other things going on as well, which we'll touch base on as well. So this first slide, I want to kind of set the stage here. I want to look at where we are in our preliminary budget we are today and kind of anchor back to what we were seeing back in this time last year when we had our formal budget adoption and try to show the comparison between the five-year period. And then we'll zero in on the 2019 numbers. Basically, looking at our five-year period, 2019 through 2023, or 2018 through 2022 in particular, our forecast has improved quite a bit in regards to our bottom line. We're showing an $83 million improvement in our forecast of net revenues for the period 2018 through 2022. A large portion of that is attributed to what was presented earlier today, which is our results for 2018, and those go forward. Focusing on 2018 to 2022, our revenues are up by $83 million in that time period. It's mostly attributed to our hydro long-term power costs, our revenue we get from those long-term contracts. Those are cost-based contracts, and as our costs go up, we get revenue associated with that. That's a large driver of that. And that's about $83 million. Our expenses are up about $1 million, and I'll go into a little more detail on that. The operating expenses are up about $28 million in that time period, and our taxes are up about $3 million, and that's attributed to our increased retail revenue forecast due to the load growth. Our depreciation expense is down a little bit, and that's due to some of the timing of when we thought we were going to be putting some of those major assets into service, and kind of anchoring back to the discussion this morning. And our net interest expense is down about $17 million. That's a combination of higher interest earnings on higher cash balances and our continuation of our reduced debt out in the outer years. We're forecasting to borrow less in the outer years. So overall, that the net revenue picture is quite a bit better than what we were saying last year at this time. Looking at our liquidity, again, we're about where we said we were going to be at in 2022, because even though we've got a better bottom line of $83 million in that time period, we also received that approximately $62 million from Alcoa. Our capital expenditures have gone up forecasted from that time period, particularly as we've implemented some, you know, like move from the status quo scenario to a more fully strategic facilities plan, headquarters and service center plan. So basically, we're kind of about where we were, where we said we'd be out in 2022, but we are forecasting to borrow less in 2022. And looking at our debt reduction, we're pretty much right in line where we said we were going to be at previously from last year to this year. We do anticipate borrowing a little low interest loans for Peshawson wastewater work in 2019, about $2.5 million. But we can see out in 2022, we are forecast to borrow less in 2022 for liquidity requirements. And we still are forecast to maintain our debt ratio well below 35% in those outer years, and we're looking at about 31% in 2019. So that's kind of looking at the five-year picture, and now I'm going to zero in on the 2019 view. As we mentioned earlier, you were presented the business plan as of on October 1st, and you can see right here our preliminary budget is pretty much right in line with our bottom line results are right in line with what we were saying for 2019 business plan. It's a little bit less, and that's due to mostly operating expenses being less on the hydro side than we were planning, which does lower our revenue a little bit, cost-based structure. So we're right in line with what we were said at business planning. Digging in a little deeper, looking at our compared to the preliminary budget compared to last year's budget, things that jump out is our service revenue is quite a bit higher. As we've been communicating, we have a forecasted load increases compared to where we were in budget, a lot higher than where we were at budget, but not necessarily compared to where we were at our current forecast. As we've adjusted our forecast to account for that new load coming on, particularly HDL and crypto. But it's about a 7% increase from last year before we kind of implemented that new load forecast into our retail revenue forecast. Our net surplus energy revenue is up slightly. This is mostly attributed to our hydro long-term contract revenue. We have some operating costs that are increasing, and their cost-plus contracts are being reflected in that. Our operating expenses are up just a little bit. Again, that's consistent with the long-term hydro contract revenue. Depreciation taxes are pretty much right in line. Another item to note is our non-operating activity is down quite a bit. Again, that's a net expense, and that's attributed to our increased earnings on our higher cash balances and our little bit of debt reduction that's compared to where we were. Digging further into service revenue, I will go over this quickly. This is looking at that basically 4.5% growth in our residential retail growth. That's compared to what we were forecasting. There is no electric rate increase in our 2019 budget. And then water, we assume about a 2% growth. We do have a 2% rate increase planned in our preliminary budget, which is the last year of our five-year plan. Wastewater, we assume 1.5% growth. We do have the 5% rate adjustment. Again, that's last year of the planned rate increases. And then fiber, telecom, we have approximately about 1,100 new fiber installations planned. And again, our service revenue of $69.5 million is right in line with what we were saying at our business plan. Looking at our net surplus energy revenue, I'm going to take my time on this one to make sure I'm very clear on this one. Looking at our slice contract revenue compared to adopted budget of 2018 to the preliminary budget of 2019, the comment I have here is the higher value slice is rolling off. As you know, in our slice program, we have a laddered slice approach where we enter into those five-year, 5% slices. One will roll off, we enter into a new one. So what you're seeing here is a 5% slice is rolled off that we had in 2018 that was valued back, you know, in 2014. It was a five-year look, and the market was a lot different there. So as those slices, that slice rolls off, and we recover with a different slice that was entered into later for the future years, there's that delta between what the market was saying at that point in time versus where we're at now. Now we look at the block and pre-schedule in real time. This is kind of, the block is kind of a hedge position, but we do have some unhedged energy. I do want to make sure I don't contradict myself, but the 2019 prices are showing signs of moving forward for some recovery compared to where we were in 2018. We do have some unhedged position, not block position. So that energy that isn't hedged is showing that value attributed to a higher market that we're seeing in 2019. So that's where that's kind of basically consistent with 2018 in regards to those values. And looking at the hydro long-term contract, again, this is repeated, but this is showing that those operating costs for our hydros are going up a little bit. And as those costs go up, they get recovered through our revenue on those cost-plus contracts. And then the remaining, the other purchase power is the Nine Canyons. That's consistent with 2018 budget. So looking at these together, again, it's right in line with what we were saying in our business plan. I'll move on. Looking at some other operating revenues, I'll cover this fairly quickly. We do have an increase in our transmission and wheeling. That is a cost-based contract as well, so as we invest in our assets and our compliance, those costs are recovered through those contracts. The other item I will note is the miscellaneous other items. There are some long-term contract administration fees that we did not budget for in 2018 that we have in the budget for 2019. And again, our other operating revenues are right consistent with our business planning. Now I'm going to look at some major contracts associated with our O&M operations. I'll go through this fairly quickly. You're familiar with this. Our major focus on big items at Rocky Reach is the C-10 turbine repairs. That's about $5.6 million. We'll continue the work on wrapping up C-9 and working on C-11. Another couple major contracts are the hatchery contracts we have for the operations of the hatcheries. We have some tree trimming and some security guard contracts. So just looking at our overall operating expenses, this is where a lot of our costs are driven from. Looking at hydro O&M, I would point out this is up about $7 million. Not only do we have a lot of contracts involving the hydros that are not labor, we do have some labor variances from 2018 to 2019, and that's pretty much our wiremen and our tech shop personnel are going to be really focused on a lot of O&M projects this year as opposed to a lot of capital projects this year. That's a pretty substantial shift in those dollars, so that's driving a lot of that hydro operation and maintenance cost. Electric transmission, I'd point that out, and we'll cover this a little bit later in the presentation. You know, we're going to be implementing the two dam operations, independent operations. That's going to take some personnel, and there's some costs associated with that. That's kind of affecting that electric transmission piece. Looking at a couple other items, I usually bring this up. This conservation, I just want to talk about this. Again, this increase from last year to this year, that's that recognition of the conservation assets. As we spend money on conservation, we capitalize that. We put that on the balance sheet, and we recognize it over a longer-term period, 10 years. So those costs are recognized over a period to try to attribute with the benefit we get from the extra energy we get. So this is just recognizing the investments we've made in that conservation effort. As we continue to make those investments, that amortization, this recognition of those costs, will continue to go up until we kind of hit a flat line on that one. Another administration in general, I'll just say this is up a little bit. Part of that is due to the fact that we anticipate, we won't, we, uh, without getting into too much the weeds, we anticipate a decrease in our vacancy rate. That means the opportunity that will be less amount of people not being hired or a succession of people are vacant. We anticipate streamlining that. We're not actually going to be hiring as many people we have in the past, relatively speaking, so there is a little bit of shortness in that vacancy rate. We also have we continue our initiative on the technology and innovation, which is partially driving that A&G cost up as well. Looking at our non-operating activity, investment earnings, as you can see, we have a higher cash balances and we do have higher interest rates, which is attributing much higher investment earnings. Interest expense, it's about the same as it was last year. There's two things. Our debt has gone down. Part of our debt portfolio is variable rate debt, and that variable rate interest expense, just like our interest earnings rates have gone up, the variable component on that has gone up as well. We were budgeting about 1.36% on that. And this year we're expecting about 2.75%. It's about $60 million of variable rate debt. So that's kind of offsetting the benefits we get from the interest earnings we're getting on that cash balance. It's all part of our asset liability mix with the fixed and the variable rate components of our debt. Overall, we're quite a bit lower than we were last year at this time, but consistent with our business planning. Moving on to major capital projects. This is familiar with what you heard this morning with Rock Island. We got significant investments in Powerhouse 1. We got B1 through B4, about $20 million. We got B5, 7, and 8, about $12 million. And we're starting to look into the Powerhouse 2 rehab as well, various components of that. Not only are we working at the units, we got a lot of work with our Rock Island cranes, the bridge crane and the gantry crane. Continuing on with the hydros, just a couple I'd note out. Rock Island and Rocky Reach, the CM facilities upgrade. We got 24.7 at Rock Island as we continue that strategic facilities plan infrastructure investment, and about 10.3 at Rocky Reach. A lot of work going on at the hydros. A couple of non-hydro ones I want to point out. We're continuing our customer information system. We have about $3.5 million budgeted for 2019. And then we also have, consistent with the Shasta wastewater upgrade, $3.6 million, of which we have that $2.5 million of low-interest debt financing, we assume, related to that project. I would also note a big driver here in the distribution system is our investment in our substations. It's consistent with what you've heard in the past. We got about $4.1 million budgeted in 2019. We got work in regards to the Olmi substation, the Bavarian substation, the Chelan North Shore substation. And on fiber expansion, I just wanted to highlight we have the $2.3 million of public power benefit for the expansion. Okay. Now, this is a slide. When we every year when we bring the budget for approval, there's two things that the board is asked to approve in regards to the capital. It's the total project and the annual budget for the year, and we managed to both of those, not only the current budget, but the total project budget. And this is a detailed capital project of existing projects that we have that were the total project, or we're looking at changing what we have in there. And there's a lot of reasons we can have that. A lot of times we just don't know exactly what the full design and scope is going to be. We put in a little bit of dollars what we think we're going to do, and as we get more information, we true that up to adjust the total project cost. The one item I do want to note here is the operations and service centers. This amount is just included for planning purposes only, because no decision by the board has been made. And for the next board presentation, we're going to reduce this total project cost to reflect the preliminary property and design cost only through 2019, not the full-blown plan.
Let me jump in for a second here. I think we got ourselves a bit confused as we put this together and realized that we've not presented this the way we want to. So there are two things that happen. First, we have to include numbers for our financial forecast, and we include an estimate of what we think costs will be in advance of the board taking action. So, for example, Rock Island Powerhouse 2, if we weren't putting anything in for all of those upgrades in the 2020s, our financial forecast wouldn't make much sense because we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars out there expecting. But at this point, the board has not acted on that as a final decision. So for financial forecasting, we concluded that we should be included something for our operations and service center. That's separate from board action to approve a change in the budget, which occurs in the budget process. So for this, what we we intend to do is shift it back to the revised number, just covering the design and land acquisition costs, which are in our headlights, probably in the $15 to $20 million range, something like that. And that reserves for the board the decision with respect to whether or not we're going to invest in operation and service center, which probably that decision is coming up in 2019 sometime. So change coming in this before we before the board will be taking action in December.
Thank you, Steve. This is a list of basically new initiated projects that are going to be initiated in 2019. It's just looking at the total project costs we're envisioning in regards to those projects. So now, those were some of the major capital projects, and here's a list side by side by our systems from adopted budget of 2018 versus the 2019 preliminary budget. You can see electric distribution is up quite a bit, and that's a lot driven by our substation work that we're doing that I pointed out earlier. Couple other items of note, I would look at the corporate shared assets. This is where we have kind of those shared facility upgrades in regards to the service center and the headquarters. Looking at fiber, I would point out this portal replacement is about $1 million, and that is still, there is a potential that might be software as a service, and if it were software as a service, it would be reclassified as an operating and maintenance expense, would not be a capital forecast, which would drive our operating and maintenance expense cost of the fiber system. So I just wanted you to be aware of that.
We repeat that, sorry.
Of the fiber, this $1.8 million change, of the $7.4 million in the preliminary budget of fiber, there's $1 million project for portal replacement, which is a pretty significant investment. That is still being examined in regards to the proper classification between whether it should be a capital investment or an operation and maintenance investment, software as a service. If it's software as a service, it'll be expensed for the year in 2019.
That's the part I missed. Thank you.
If it's capital, it'll be hung up on the balance sheet and depreciated over the life of the asset.
Okay, thanks.
Another major driver of capital is the wastewater project, which we've mentioned is the Peshawson system upgrades. So looking at the total capital and looking at some of our regulatory assets, this is where the conservation gets hung up on the balance sheet, some of our license obligations. We're right in line with what we were saying at our business plan. So we were thinking about $153, $154 million of capital and regulatory assets. And right now, currently, the budget's about $153 million. We're continuing to look at our resource requirements and sharpen our pencils. So there's potential this may change. And if it, you know, it may change down a little bit, but I think we're pretty good where we're at. So, any questions on the capital? All right, this is kind of changing gears. We're going to look at new positions. This is, got to look at both these slides together. So, we've categorized these positions that we're planning on hiring in four groups. The first group is the technology and innovation. We got two positions in the budget. We have the automated meter reading initiative project manager. And we have a mobile technology project program manager. That's part of our technology and innovation. Under construction and project management, we have five positions. We have two limited assignment construction managers, a limited assignment contract safety program manager. As we're doing strategic planning, we have one strategic planning program manager. We also have one transmission planning engineer. We've got significant investments in transmission and distribution. Looking at reinvesting in service levels, we have eight positions. We have a communications lineman. That's part of our fiber telecom area. We have two wiremen, two clearance operators, a CM electrical superintendent, a district safety and health coordinator, and a construction manager. And then we also have two dam independent operations. We have five positions there. Four system operators, and those were presented to the board, and the board actually approved those positions on July 23rd, 2018. And they also have one programmer. That's a pretty generic term, but it's to help with the two dam independent operations as well. So overall, we have a total of 20 positions, but those are offset by succession planning and attrition and exchanges, which is a subtraction of about eight. So basically, our head count is up 12. And that's consistent with all the supporting documentation we presented in the business planning. We were forecasting about 12 bodies up in business planning. So that's what we currently have in the budget process.
And Craig, if I could add, of the 12, four of them the board previously approved to go to the independent operations. In fact, we've already begun to hire those folks. So it's eight relative to what the board has already approved. And of those eight, three are limited term assignments designed to address peak workload over the course of the next 3 years.
And help me with clearance operator.
Excuse me?
Clearance operator.
To what are they?
Yeah.
I would have to ask a hydro person.
Kirk Hudson, hydro person here. The clearance operators, those are positions we're planning to just use the existing operators that we have, but then focus them on the clearance process, which is the lockout tagout process. So all the operators are trained in that, but we're recognizing that we need to focus on the lockout tagout process, somebody with continuity from beginning to end.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that makes sense to me. I used to work as clearance operator, but it was with people who were skipping school because they had a different concept.
Steve, I should note also I didn't on here on the strategic planning program manager. That should be a limited assignment as well. That's usually a during the process of the strategic plan, but then we do not keep that position.
That's right. Thank you. So we did add one position into my organization to work on strategic planning this year, but the assumption is it's just for the term of the strategic plan.
All right. So this is just kind of looking at our 2018 compared to 2019 market trends. And salary increases are forecasted to be a little bit higher than 2018. And just so I want to point out the wages in the utility and energy industry are outpacing general industry by about 0.1% per year. And then looking at our 2019 budget for our assumptions we have in our budget for a non-bargaining unit, we have about 2.8% merit and about 0.5 market adjustment. We also keep a little bit of pool aside for promotions and structural and other adjustments. But I would note these are just assumptions, and we'll continue to refine and look at the information as we get it and validate it before any raise pool is determined. It's just a placeholder that we have in here based on the best information we have at the time. Looking at the bargaining unit, this is all tied to our collective bargaining agreement. We have a general wage increase of 3% effective April 1st of 2019. We also account for step increases and dual ratings in the budgeting process. Looking at some key employer benefit cost percentages, we got our medical benefits are up about 5% compared to 2018. PERS, that is basically a Washington State actuarially determined number, so that's up about 10%. 401A, that's all based on the employees' participation into the program. Looking at our total medical benefits, we're up about 9.2% from 2018 to 2019. It's been a consistent increase in our medical and benefits throughout the last few years. Okay. Now I want to get into this is kind of the big picture look at the combined district expenditures. This is bringing it all together. So this is looking at our total expenditures. We're up about 6%, $364 million versus $342 million, what we adopted last year. You can see that's pretty much driven by some of our operating expenses, but our non-operating expenses are down. Again, that's the net interest, that's the interest expense benefit, interest income benefit we're getting. And our net reduction, this is driving our total expenditures and net reduction. It's up about 63% from last year. Again, we're assuming we're going to pay down about $41 million of existing debt, but we are going to borrow about $2.5 million, so our net reduction is down about $38.5 million. So our total expenditures and debt reduction is about $403 million, compared to last year was about $366 million, so about 10%. Again, the driver of most of these increases is all the works at the hydros, not only the turbines and the units, but the facilities upgrades, a lot of investment activity going on. So transitioning to our financial policies metrics, I'm happy to say that everything is green and we're right on track. I would point out that our debt ratio is expected to be about 30.7 in 2019 as the expected case, and our financial liquidity is looking to be about $414 million, and we got strong cover. So the district combined financial policies look great. looking at our business financial policies, business lines, I would point out, this was covered earlier this morning, the wastewater is showing at 86%. The target was to be above 100% by 2019, and we'll continue to address that through our strategic planning process. Fiber and water both look strong for 2019. Looking at our test metrics of our integrated electric system, we have a couple that are just outside our target of expectation that we were testing during this test period. That's showing that maybe our electric revenues aren't quite keeping up pace with our investments that we're making, because we're making such significant investments in all of our assets. We're going to continue to monitor these, and there's a potential these may change in the future. As we continue to learn more about these metrics, we may modify the integrated electric metrics a little bit. So, big picture, our budget basically is right in alignment with our business plan, and we'll continue our reinvesting in core assets and people, continue to pay down debt, and continue the public power benefit program. So the budget next steps are, we'll continue to review the information and make the adjustments we need to make. We'll come back on November 19th and present updated figures. And then we'll request a board action on December 3rd to approve the 2019 budget. And for that, I'll leave it open for any questions or comments.
If there are no questions or comments, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Clear and actually pretty darn concise.
Nice job, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
No juggling.
No juggling act. It went well.
Actually, really appreciate Craig showing up today after a tough loss last week. So we're a little worried that he might not make it today.
Salt in the wound.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to offer empathy. That's all.
Oh. Well, that being said, just an overall comment. Just really pleased with where our budget is, the budgeting process, and from Kelly through her staff, the diligence that is here. So thank you very much. Consent agenda. Commissioners?
I would move approval of the consent agenda, which has been modified to include the corrected minutes page and with the addition of agenda item number 11.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda with the correction in the minutes and with the addition of item 11. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Item 10.
The resolution declaring Corridor Company Incorporated of Wakefield, Massachusetts as the sole source supplier of Contract 365 software and authorizing Amendment Number 1 to System Agreement SA Number 17-194 with Corridor Company Incorporated. Mark Ripley, Mark Belton will present today.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Mark Belton, Procurement and Contract Services.
Mark Ripley, Manager.
We are coming to present our resolution today. The high-level bullet points out of that is that we currently have a sole source that's approved by the board for the purchase of our CM.app software. During implementation work, there has been some further research in IT's cloud capabilities and further technology updates from Corridor Inc. as the vendor that provided an opportunity for the district to consolidate and move to a same product but on a different platform in the cloud that they call Contracts 365. So we are asking to recertify the sole source on the Contracts 365 software. The switch allows PCS to streamline our solution from two softwares to one, and it reduces the required IT support by approximately 2,300 hours over the five-year term of this agreement. This change also further streamlines PCS processes and allows greater visibility to district employees for contract management and provides greater reporting capabilities to the district, both at the project management level and all the way up to managing levels.
Can you repeat? I think I missed you, what you were saying. It saves 2,300 hours?
Yes. So the solution that we had developed with IT was one part was the purchase of the initial software from Corridor, and the second part was going to be implemented by IT in our PeopleSoft program that we have. And so we were able to reduce all of those hours that IT would have had to put into implementing that system, and that comes up to approximately 2,300 hours over the five-year term.
Wow.
Impressive.
Additional thoughts or questions? Hearing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's pretty nice to be the silent partner, huh?
Well, I tell you what, he did a great job.
Yeah.
He said everything he needed to be. I was just here to look good.
All right. Resolution 12.
A resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into an enabling agreement, PSA number 18-065, with Peer Technical Incorporated for Temporary Employee Services. Brett Bickford, KDM, will present.
Good afternoon. Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management.
Katie Yunt, Legal.
Since 2006, the district has used Peer Technical for assigned employees to do district budgeted work where there hasn't been a long-term staffing need. We've used peer employees with work such as construction inspection, support of hatchery operations, asset management, contract advisory services, operational training, IT support, and other administrative support. The relationship with Peer has been very beneficial to the district. Their prices have been very fair and reasonable. Their employees we've had no performance issues. We've had no safety incidents. And therefore, district staff is recommending to continue to use Peer to recruit and provide additional staff when needed. However, over the last 12 years, laws have evolved and changed, particularly with regard to Washington state labor laws. And so Katie's worked diligently to understand what those are and to come up with a set of recommendations, which we've prepared a draft contract that helps address all those labor requirements for the state of Washington, as well as we've updated it with the latest district's requirements for insurance. The existing contract will remain in place until this one is executed. We would like to revise how the contract is administered in that typically on an annual basis, we will come to the board with a recommendation for an estimate on the amount that we would authorize for each year. We're proposing to change that. This resolution would suggest that we would be authorized to spend up to $2.5 million per year for up to a five-year term.
Commissioners, thoughts? Questions? Hearing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll spare you the silent partner piece, yeah.
Thank you both.
Commissioners, we have two resolutions before us, 10 and 12.
I have one question.
Please.
If you don't mind me going back a little bit. The five-year period is, I mean, why 5 years, not 3 years, four? I mean,
so I can answer that, Commissioner. So because we said so. there was really no magic to it. Okay. We sort of have a rule of thumb in procurement, particularly as it relates to these kinds of service agreements, that we want to review them periodically and make sure that the pricing is still good, they're still the best supplier, that there aren't any updates or changes, as was the case here. you know, in terms of legal requirements, contracting requirements that we need to amend the contract for. Actually, Pierre's been very good about amending it along the way if we need to, if something comes up in a given year. But it's basically a placeholder that has been a rule of thumb that we've had at the district for a period of time. It is just the five-year period is just the authorization from the board. The actual contract with Pierre doesn't have a definite term, and it could keep going, and we could terminate it as well at any time. So the district usually retains the ability to terminate all these contracts when they're no longer necessary or if there's a problem or just for convenience.
I see.
But in order to get the board's approval, it forces staff to check in and make sure that the supplier, the contractor, the pricing, and all of those things are still good, and then come back to the board to authorize expenditures into the future.
So the 5 years isn't with peer, it's with?
It's board approval.
It's board approval to
right.
allow staff to do that.
Right. It's just a good check for staff so that it just doesn't carry on and on and on and on into the future without a revisitation at the board level to say, this is what we're doing. We still think it's a good deal. Here's why.
Okay. I got it.
We can consider these one at a time or both together.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of Resolutions 10 and 12 as presented.
And a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept Resolutions 10 and 12 as presented. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motions signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Back to 13.
Yeah, so I want to invite Lindsay Mons up. We have a technical meeting set up to discuss cryptocurrency rates, but we really haven't had a public session where we've had the opportunity for the public to dive in and ask whatever questions they might want to ask about how the rate is constructed. And that's scheduled for tomorrow.
Wednesday.
I'm sorry, Wednesday. Yeah, that's right, I'm missing a day, aren't I? So scheduled for Wednesday. We wanted to have Lindsay walk through this with you just so you'd see what the material is that's going to be going out in public. Lindsay?
Great. Thank you, Steve. Lindsay Mons, Business Manager and Customer Utilities. As Steve mentioned, Wednesday night's meeting is not an official, or it's not a board meeting, and so we wanted to give you the opportunity now to see the materials that we're going to present on Wednesday, ask any questions you may have in advance of talking with the public. I'm not going to go through every slide of this presentation. A lot of this is information we've talked about together many times before, but did want to touch on a couple slides. And I noticed that I lost my slide numbers, so we're going to have to kind of work through this together as we go. But first of all, kind of the most important thing today for you to know is what's changed since we talked last time. So we have a slide about the third one in that says what's changed since September and also what hasn't changed since September. So starting with what we haven't changed, we're still going forward with the same rate proposal as far as the tiered customer charges based on our Schedule 35 current rates, as well as the demand charge for commercial industrial based on Schedule 35. We do still have a proposed phase-in of a residential demand charge that's different than what's in 35 because of the different impact of those in those areas. We also presented to you previously on updated upfront charges. That's the infrastructure component that we collect prior to connection. What has changed since we were here last is the discussion first on the variable energy rates. So we had proposed any customers over a megawatt would be charged a variable energy rate based on the market at the time of energy use. We've since increased or widened the range of customers that would be eligible for what we would consider more of a fixed rate, a periodically set energy rate that is still market-based, but it would be set on either a annual or more often basis. So those customers have a little bit more predictability in their energy rates. So we've increased that to 3 megawatts. Anything over 3 megawatts would have a separate contract that may include that variable rate. Minimum demand charges, various other things. There's a slide later in the presentation on that as well. Another thing that's changed in talking about an estimated energy rate, we do look to what market prices are looking forward for the future year. So when we're looking at the April to April time frame from 2019 to 2020, We did see a little bit of an increase in the energy pricing in that time of about 0.2 cents a kilowatt hour once we run it through the models. And that number could change slightly again before we get to the final rate presentation. Typically, we'd see want to set a rate like this in the late November, early December timeframe. So that's another item. And then the third bullet on this slide is the addition of a demand exceedance charge. So this is not a regular reoccurring charge on the customer's bill. This would be in lieu of the higher customer charges that we talked about early on cryptocurrency. And this charge would impact just those customers who are causing the increase in cost. So each customer gets an authorized demand limit when they come into our system based on, you know, what the system can safely handle at their location, what infrastructure is available, things like that. So those customers who exceed that limit that they've been authorized to operate at would incur a demand exceedance charge that would help us recover our customer service cost as well as any infrastructure damage that may occur that may be undetected at the time. So that's what's changed since September. I'll pause here if you have any questions, because that's a lot of information. Yeah,
Randy.
On that last one, the demand exceedance, is there a consideration in place for if their exceedance was great enough that it could potentially, in that intervening time period, cause damage to our system?
Yeah, this would not be in lieu of our ability just to disconnect a customer. Really, if they exceed their limit, that is our remedy, is to disconnect. We do have situations where the exceedance is just a little bit, and a customer, you know, because we don't have AMI at this time, so we don't know in real time what's going on. It may be 2 weeks later, a month later, when we get our meter reads and discover they've exceeded. So this is kind of a temporary remedy. But if it is reoccurring, it would lead to disconnection. And if it was a safety risk, we'd immediately disconnect as well.
And it would show up immediately if we had everybody on AMI.
Close to immediate, yeah.
Yeah. Commissioner, we also have a provision in the service regulations where if a customer damages district equipment and so forth, we do have remedies available to seek recompense for that.
All right. The next few slides are really background information for customers that may not have been following us all along, just kind of the why, how we got here, why are we talking about this, and then some kind of official looking slides about our rate schedule itself, the definition, as well as kind of the actual charges that will come in the rate schedule. This is how all of our rate schedules are written, with the basic charge, demand charge, energy charge. We do plan to spend a fair bit of time with customers talking about, you know, what does this mean to them? How do they calculate the new cost on their bill? So I'm on the slide that looks kind of like bill lines. This is what our system shows us. The bills you get in the mail look a little bit different, but they talk about the kilowatt hours used in a month and at what rate that's billed, and then the demand charge and basic charges. So this first example is a non-residential customer located within one of our local cities. You can see the city tax line there, second from the bottom. That's a tax that's just assessed on customers within city limits of the various municipalities. So we don't use that particular dollar amount in our rate calculations, but just as an awareness, that's what that is. So when we're looking at our non-residential customers, the change that they'll see in April, or would see if the rate's approved, in April of 2019 would be the increase in the energy charge from the 2.7 cents that they're currently billed in rate 35 up to a estimated currently a 5.31 cents per kilowatt hour. So this particular bill, if you look at all the costs together and create an effective rate, they're currently paying about 3.6 cents a kilowatt hour in this particular month. And under the new rates, would be at about 6.2 cents a kilowatt hour. This is a typical cryptocurrency type load. There's not a lot of, say, house power on top of the cryptocurrency. The load factor is very high at 94%. So these are the very flat loads that we see of the more commercial type cryptocurrency. And then the next example is in residential. The residential customers would see two rate steps. So the first step in April of 2019 would be that increase in the energy rate to the 5.31 cents. And then in April of 2020, the implementation of the demand charge for residential customers. This particular customer has about 50% load factor, which means that they have a cryptocurrency sort of base load, and then a lot of variable, say, house, ovens, dishwashers, washers, dryer, things like that, running in addition to their cryptocurrency. So that variability of their load is what drives a lower load factor of 50%. So their estimated all-in energy rate they're paying right now is about 5.3 cents a kilowatt hour. And that would increase in April of 2019 up to about 7.9 cents a kilowatt hour. And then in 2020, when we implement demand, the increased demand rates, that would increase again up to about 10.5 cents. Residential customers like this have a unique opportunity to decrease that effective rate by doing some planned energy use in their, on the residential side. So you may, in your various meetings with other utilities, have heard of people trying residential demand charges. So, and the various opportunities customers have to decrease their bill through energy planning. So we'll take, you know, questions from customers on all these and probably walk through other, if customers bring specific questions associated with, you know, how do I calculate this? What does that mean? That's really the purpose of the meeting, is to talk with those customers and see what questions they have for us and help them understand where we're headed. As mentioned, upfront costs, no changes from previous here. And then the next steps after the information meeting on Wednesday night would be the public rate and moratorium hearings. So this would be the public's next opportunity to provide feedback to the board. This would be the final hearing associated with this rate action if the board supports the recommendation being made. We would also consider moratorium recommendations at that time. So how we would transition from a moratorium into the standard rates in April of 2019. We do have a fees and charges update at that time as well. That is where our upfront charges are housed. So we will need to update that schedule. Other things that we're working in the meantime, we are drafting those new customer agreements that are associated with this rate, updating our application process and associated policies and regulations. So that's where we are there. If you have any other questions or anything, I'm happy to take them.
In the last month or so, how much inquiry have you received on what's going on or input since our last meeting?
I actually am not the one that receives most of that, but I, from my perspective, it's been pretty quiet. I'll look around, see if really see many others here, but yeah, I've not heard much more than we've gotten in the past.
You sent this out, all of your known crypto miners, or the information about the meeting, I mean.
Yes, we've notified the existing miners as well as other people that have expressed interest in being informed on the process. We sent out postcards and emails and things to let them know about the meeting.
It's actually, Commissioner, the public meeting in advance of the rate adoption required by the most recent PURPA memorandum or resolution that was adopted by the board. So there's been quite a bit of notice, including social media and publication.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
We'd like to invite Justin Erickson up to cover a couple of other manager items for us.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services.
I've got three items to discuss with you this afternoon. The first of which is a certificate of appreciation that we received recently, and I'll pass that out so you can see that in person. I'm joined this afternoon by Jennifer Burns, the Environmental and Cultural Resource Program Manager for the district. We are pleased to report to you that the district recently received a certificate of appreciation for our contributions in protecting and preserving cultural resources. This was given by tribal elders of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation. This award recognizes the district's support preserving traditional, cultural, and spiritual places affected by our various operations, and it was also in recognition of related efforts for the Pisashtin Pinnacles. And Jennifer actually received that award, and so I'll turn it over to her to give you a few more details.
Actually, I really don't have much to say. Again, I'm Jennifer Burns, Environmental Cultural Program Manager. I really just wanted to say I appreciate the opportunity to go on behalf of the district, and I have to say I was pleasantly surprised by the dinner. I had a chance to meet the tribal elders. I got to hear their stories about families growing up here, the Miller family in particular. And it was very interesting and a unique opportunity, and I truly appreciated it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Nita Warden, I'm impressed with how rapidly you learn how to pronounce Pisashtin.
There we go, yeah.
Well, I've lived here a long time.
Well, I was talking.
Yeah. Thank you, Jennifer, for all your work related to this. Jennifer, thank you very much.
All right, I'll ask Tracy Yount to join me. Thank you, Tracy. It's an honor for Tracy and I to be here to report to you that our Suzanne Hartman has been awarded the J. Rocky Lifetime Achievement Award. This coveted award is issued by the Puget Sound Chapter of the Public Relations Society of America. The J. Rocky Lifetime Achievement Award was established in 2002 in honor of Jay's commitment to the public relations profession. Mr. Rocky was the grandfather of PR in the Northwest and is widely known for having made the 1962 Seattle World's Fair such a well-attended and profitable event. This award recognizes the career achievements of a Puget Sound area professional, public relations professional, who has advanced the field of public relations and demonstrated outstanding professional ability and conduct throughout his or her career. And Tracy will have a few additional details about this distinguished recognition.
You know, I was thinking about all the stuff that Suzanne's done for the PUD. And there's a lot of categories of how somebody can contribute. I've got to save some stuff to talk about in a few weeks when she's going to be going. So I'm just going to touch on one today, which is our brand awareness. And Suzanne does a lot of great things, and I think we all know that. And this award is an example. But this is not the only award that she directly, obviously, is. It's all about Suzanne in this one. But she's also helped with other awards and shown through her leadership and communications, how important it is to reach out and learn from others and share what it is we do. There's just a list, APPA Award of Excellence in 2018, Northwest Public Power Association First Place Wildcard Award for the Julio Cruz Day, 2015 Public Relations Society Totem Award, 2016 Gold Quill Award, American Public Power Association Award of Excellence, Northwest Public Power Association First Place crisis communication. She's also passed this past September, the Public Relations Society of America announced that she was elected into the College of Fellows. So this is a person, Suzanne, that's done a great deal of work for the PUD, and I am going to talk more about it at a later event. But I didn't fully appreciate when Suzanne came here the significance of getting the recognition and reaching out and being a part of that broader communication industry. And we are really fortunate to have her. And I'd just like to announce that I've rescinded her retirement. And I would like to take a vote right now. Any opposed? I didn't think so. Okay. So anyway, Suzanne, thank you very much and congratulations. What a great honor.
Of course, I'm never without some words.
But I'd just like to say that it doesn't happen with me alone. Somebody in the room, Ms. Kimberly, and Christy, and Mario, and Tracy, it all, you know, it's a team effort. So, thank you.
I wanted to read something from Suzanne. She couldn't be here today. Susan Gillen, sorry. First time I introduced myself to Suzanne, I said Susan, and she said, it's Suzanne, and that was your one. I tried to get it right from then on. Anyway, this is from Susan Gillen. I'm sorry I'm not able to attend today's meeting. Kim and I wrote the nomination for Suzanne's award, and we are excited to see her recognized. She has been a great mentor and role model to me, encouraging me to enter my work in contests, which I've won, and to continue my education through workshops and online courses. She will be missed. Yes, she will.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
So I just need to say I'm really going to miss our conversation that we have about, you know, what the squirrels offer up as a sacrifice. I mean, we have a great online conversation going. So, I'll need your personal email. So yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I also just want to mention that the award celebration will occur this Wednesday, November 7th at 5:30 at Art Marble 21 in Seattle, if anybody's able to make it. And finally, this afternoon, I wanted to update the commission on the Beebe Bridge Park camping pilot effort. As you recall, this is a public benefit program initiative, and the rollout was placed on hold in 2018 while the district evaluated a variety of online reservation systems that would provide a comprehensive solution for this and other park facilities. This effort has been delayed because of some concern related to the electronic data and credit card information that is collected as part of those reservation systems. I want to make sure that we get this right the first time. And so we are evaluating potential vendors. We hope to have a reservation system at least partially in place for the 2019 season, but at this time we don't anticipate being able to roll out the camping portion effectively in 2019. So, but this is something that's near and dear to all of our hearts, and staff is working diligently on it. We have a meeting tomorrow to discuss this further. So I look forward to providing you future updates, but did want to give you some advance notice that we don't anticipate being able to have that in place for next season. Be happy to answer any questions that you may have related to that.
Let me add one thing just to make sure that we're clear about how this works. So the board authorized a pilot program on the campus. We said we'd come back. We were thinking we were going to come back this year to make a call about whether to offer it for 2019. We're just not even ready. The registration system is not in place. And so it'll be another year before we bring that back to you. So that's basically it. Then it's your choice as to whether to continue to offer the program or not.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you.
Any other manager items?
That's it.
Okay, commissioner items. Need a motion to set the upcoming meetings. And would appreciate those motions coming forward.
Mr. Chairman, I move to set the following meetings, and I will, my motion will include both, if that's all right.
Please.
First of all, on November 13th, 2018, at 5:30 p.m. at Tijuana's Mexican Restaurant, 709 First Avenue Southeast, Quincy, Washington, for the purpose of holding a Mid-Sea Commissioners and General Managers meeting. And secondly, on November 20th, 2018 at 1 p.m. at the Schlenk County Office, 400 Douglas Street, Wenatchee, for the purpose of holding a tri-commission meeting.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to set dates and times for two special meetings, one November 13th, one November 20th. Discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor of the motion as presented, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say no. Motion is carried.
Mr. Vice, just to let you know that I will not be available on 9/13. I committed to speak at the Public Power Forward Summit on cryptocurrency issues and need to get to Texas for that. So
I will not be there for that meeting.
Texas or Tijuana?
I was going to say.
I don't know.
Commissioners, I won't be at that meeting either. I have a commitment with the LH Land Ski Club Board. We have an activity that I'm directing, so I can't make that meeting either.
You know, my members, I will not be able to either. So.
Oh, I'm not there. Quincy, oh. My plans have changed. So.
Okay.
So we don't need the special meeting, but we've now set one anyway in case any of you decide not to go where it is you're supposed to be.
That's the 13th?
You'll be there. Okay.
We had three, and so there's been a plan change. I think.
I don't know. any other commissioner items before we get to commissioner travel?
I have an item I'd like to follow up from our presentation this morning on paperless board meetings. I was the board member representing you, working with the committee, and first I want to express my appreciation to Rebecca and the team for all their work, and was very, from my perspective, watching them work. They did a very thorough job and made a good, what I think is the best recommendation. So I guess I have two parts to this. One is recommending to you, my fellow commissioners, that we accept the recommendation of the team to move forward with the Board Effects software package. See if you have any questions on anything that was presented this morning. And then the second part of that recommendation is, I've been giving this some thought as well. I'm thinking as a new board member coming onto the board, what would have been helpful to me? I'm not really sure how this fits in with the rest of the PUD organization with technology, but I would like to at least propose for discussion purposes the notion of, as part of our support as commissioners, technology support, that some latitude be given on the type of technology that we use. And in my past, you know, my past role, I would have said we need to standardize on the platform, and the platform is the software. What we have in the way of flexibility, the type of tool, computer, iPad, Microsoft, can't remember the
Surface.
I
think Samsung has something too.
There's lots of different options, and the difference between a commissioner coming on and say a staff member coming on with a permanent role is that we come in for a short period of time. We come in with a background of knowledge of different types of technology, and it would appear to me if we can, at least as a pilot to get started with this, give the commissioner, support the commissioner with their choice of technology and give them the option. And let me give you an example. And I'm going to use Gary and I as a comparison. Gary may choose a Surface tablet. I may choose an iPad. Anne may choose an iPad. She may choose a small one. I may choose a large one that has a keyboard associated with it and has telephone capabilities so that I can access when I'm. So that's my recommendation, flexibility, and to move forward with it, work on it as a trial, and if we learn that we need to have more consistency with the type of technology that that we use, then so be it. That's something for us to learn and move forward, but I would recommend as much flexibility as possible. So that's what I'm recommending to you.
You know, I'm completely supportive of what Steve is saying. I guess the question I have is, does what moving forward on that really require board action?
I think we'd like to at least examine the implications first, and so if we could do that and get back to you for the next board meeting, then we can advise you best as to what it would mean in terms of the existing district policy, both the implications for how we would manage the resource, but also what the implications are for the board just making a decision like this. So we can examine both pieces and get back to you.
Because I haven't shared that with you. So I don't want to just surprise and spring and then expect a decision. Well, I can surprise, but I'm not expecting a decision on that. So just in turnaround, we expect the same thing of staff here. And I don't want to surprise anybody. But I'm just letting you know what I've been thinking. I don't know if you have any thoughts, any different. I do like what I see with the software. Technology is kind of where I'm at, question-wise.
Commissioner, can I just ask for consideration on the impacts to policy, et cetera, at the district here and how we might manage it? When you say support, you mean a district-supplied device within a range of devices that the commissioners could make selections from? Is that right? Okay.
But on that very topic, question that's in my mind and I would need some guidance and help with is that on my Microsoft Surface, I use it for district email, but I use it for other purposes as well. So I'm not at all worried about sticking a thumb drive in it. However, if all of a sudden now we're doing this cloud, I need guidance to understand that if I'm putting a thumb drive or some device into my personal computer, am I endangering the data? And am I opening a door for crypto hack?
So I think those are good questions and the type of thing that we would explore, the joint use and some of those implications, and we can look through all that and get back to you. Sure.
Thank you.
Believe it or not, we've faced a lot of those before.
Well, enough to go forward? All right. Other commission items? Commission travel, 15.
Hello, Lisa Sanders, admin and finance, and we don't really have a lot to go over. Everyone is registered for November WAPUTA meetings. Commissioner McKenna, I have changed your hotel. I wasn't able to update your calendar. I didn't have permission, so I emailed you the confirmation.
Great, thank you.
And for December, I have everyone attending except Commissioners Congdon and Arsenault. Is that still right? Head nods, thank you. So for 2019, Commissioner Bowles, do you still want to stay at Town Place for WAPUTA meetings in Olympia?
My preference, yes.
Okay. We'll do that. And everyone else at DoubleTree?
Yeah.
Yes? Good. Gonna... Commissioner Arsenault?
Yes.
DoubleTree.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do you have that schedule already?
I only have a couple January and February meeting dates.
On the back.
I'll check what I have, because I might have.
Do you have more?
I might have. I'll check, and if so, I'll forward it to you.
That'd be great. Yeah. And the legislative rally. So hotels for this is super fun.
The Beacon is where the association has stayed in the past, if they have a block.
Well, and apparently they're remodeling, so they're
the Mayflower is?
the Beacon. The Mayflower opened for reservations on the 1st, but apparently I called before lunch on November 1st, and apparently everyone on the East Coast calls before I even wake up.
Wow.
And the whole block was already booked. Gone. So we're on a waiting list. So who actually knows they're not attending?
I'm a no.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'm probably not going to this year.
Okay. So I have us on a waiting list for the Mayflower. But I have some other leads from Carol.
The Beacon is, that's the one that's being remodeled? Is that what you're saying? Because the Beacon is where we've stayed the last couple of years.
Right. They just, it's not open for those dates.
Wow.
At this time. And I may be able to get us rooms as soon as they open that time.
Have a great time.
I do.
Just move out 10 blocks. Or a mile and a half.
Oh, that's not a fun place to be. I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
So hopefully we'll end up at the Mayflower. Everything will be fine. It just might be a roller coaster to get there.
Okay.
Maybe we should call Stu.
You have connections?
No, Stu does, though. I don't know how Stu does it. But.
You have friends. He does it. Maybe he has friends on the...
He makes friends of employees, and then he calls the employees directly, and at every place we go, it seems like.
Well, then you should be friends with Stu. <That's>
Yes.
<right. laughs> And just one more thing, unless you have any other questions for me. I'm looking for Commissioner Congdon's expense book.
Oh, I put it on Rebecca's desk last weekend.
You have it?
Friday afternoon.
In that case, I have it, and thank you so much. Everyone has turned their books in, and that's fabulous. Dang. On the spot. That's awesome.
All right.
Okay.
Lisa, thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks for taking care of us.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not an enviable position to be in.
All people are lining up for it.
Okay, item 16, a delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
Oh, sorry. So we had a couple of things that Commissioner Congdon asked to put on the board's balanced scorecard for the next board workshop. That's going to happen. And then I'm just going to note that we're looking into this, Northern's request on how the new antenna will work for tracking fish going through Rock Island, the bit tag. So we've got that logged. We're actually trying to create a system of things that go into a parking lot because they're not going to come back at the next meeting. And it'll take a while for them to get back. So this will go into the parking lot and come back, and it'll probably be 6 months to a year before we'll see anything on that. And that's it.
Let me throw one other thing I should have mentioned earlier. Early last week, I sent an email to John Stoll after reading an article related to water quality in Newark, New Jersey, which is rapidly developing a very close similarity to Flint, Michigan. And the question I had is, I know that our source is clean, our treatment plant is great, and at the end of our main pipelines, things are in incredible shape. And as an example, the only reason to add chlorine is to see if there's any bacterial growth in between. But my question was more along the line where it's showing up in Newark with lead content in children, is from the mains to the homes. And the question I had was, do we check that? And the answer is, yes, we're required to. Now, a couple of complications. It's not always easy for Ron and his crew to find people to who will allow them to sample plumbing fittings that are carbon with solder. and or old lead systems. But they do their best to find those, and they do, and they sample, and they report, do the reporting. And to date, we're in great shape. And so, I mean, that's just it is something that kind of comes out of your reach because it's after the meter, you know, and into the home. But there still are customers. And where are those customers on that scale? And as much as we can sample and as often as we can legally sample, the results are we're good. We do not have harmful levels of lead that are reaching our customers, which I think is just outstanding and a really good place to be. But yeah, New Ark is just getting started. Oh, and a larger city.
On that topic, Dennis, if I can add to it, there was a follow-up study done in Flint after much work had been done to improve the water system. Persistent lead readings in schools. And they determined that the water fountains that were put into schools so many years ago were the culprit. That the solder in the pipes and mm-hmm. the water fountains, drinking fountains for the kids, was the source of the bad and the lead. So you're absolutely right, is that it has to be an end-to-end investigation to make sure that the water is pure.
So, thanks for listening to that. Again, I appreciate staff. You send that email off and within a number of hours, just the quality of answers that come back and the responsiveness, greatly appreciated. So, number 17, delegation of action items.
Got two from this meeting. We want to report back to you on the root cause of B9, B6 vibration issue once it's determined. And second, determine the implications of proceeding with the, I'm trying to think of the right term, right tools.
Paperless board meeting.
Yeah, so the right tools to implement paperless board meeting.
Since we have no public remaining, it's probably difficult to get or encourage any additional public comment, but we would take it if we had it. And then any other items to come before the board as a general business? Okay. And we have an executive session.
I know you're going to be shocked. This is the most time I've ever asked for, but we have a number of items, so I'm going to ask for 120 minutes.
Two hours.
Well, it all depends on how many questions you ask.
Okay. Sign it.
And I think we're in two categories, so it's actually two.
Two. You have the new version that was provided this morning.
So.
Yes.
This will do.
That should cover both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
So 120. So Commission needs to go into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district court's board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101I to consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101B and to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when the public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of a decreased price as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101C for 120 minutes, 2 hours, and we will begin that at 2:30. Let's recess and reconvene at 2:30.
Thank you.
This is Chelan County Board of Commissioners coming out of executive session. It is 4:05. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. And there's no other business to come before the commission. We're adjourned.